Sunday, November 1st, 2020. Thank you for joining us today for part three of our unorthodox election special. There's a lot that we've been covering that seemingly nobody else wants to touch on. We went over the groups involved with the setting up the sort of agenda that we've been talking about. We went over the different entities involved with them, the plans and how they've been seeding it. Today, we're going to be focusing on the specific location and sort of the outcome as we see it. Some prediction taking place here, but it's based on facts and relevant information surrounding all of this. And as always, hopefully you will think for yourself about how this appears. But we're talking about specifically Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, even more specifically, and how all of this continues to be seeded towards this one location and the prep for some chaos that is seemingly inevitable according to the mainstream media. Ground zero, we keep hearing, with tie-ins to 9/11, interestingly involving a lot of people that seem to be tied back to 9/11 that we just talked about in the last one. Today, we're going to be focusing more specifically on the TIP, the Transition Integrity Project, and how it's interesting how we're dealing with DNC Obama national security entities as well as neocon Republicans driving the whole thing and it shattering the illusion of the two-party paradigm as far as I'm concerned. But the false flag narrative that we keep seeing build up is something that we need to make sure people are well aware of today. And Whitney's research, again, seemingly one of the few only out there covering this, is continuing to lay this out. And I have to say off the bat, the things that she's been predicting so far have continued to come true, to the collective groan of all the mainstream media lackeys out there that want to pretend like this is just fake news and every time it turns around. So thank you for once again being here today, Whitney, so we can go over this research and try to wake some people up.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is our last installment of the election special, and it may actually be the most important in terms of what we're likely to see, not just in Philadelphia, which they're framing as the epicenter, but also in cities and states throughout the country, because a lot of the people involved in planning this chaos to make Philadelphia the ground zero of 2020 election, chaos or whatever, are intimately involved in various other states throughout the country and major cities, particularly with a focus on battleground states. So this is definitely something I want to stress that's not going to be exclusive to Philadelphia, but they're definitely framing it as that particular city being their epicenter, which is their buzzword that they're using to refer to it and have been before the obvious chaos going on now in Philadelphia was even apparent. That's how when I appeared last Sunday on Slow News Day with Steve Poikkanen, I said, well, you guys should watch what's going to go down in Philadelphia because mainstream media is using all of these really concerning buzzwords, calling it the epicenter and ground zero and all the stuff. And, you know, showing pictures of Philadelphia being hit by a meteor, but they're talking about mail-in ballots. I mean, just like this weird disconnect. So, and then lo and behold, that chaos starts to unfold. So with that being said, we can just get straight into the issues at hand here. So this is my website, a republication of part three of my Cyber Reason series, which was originally published by Mint Press News when I was working there. So as you can see here, the title is How Government and Media Are Prepping America for a Failed 2020 Election, published January 28th, 2020. That's how obvious this was if you were paying attention to what intelligence was saying, U.S. intelligence was saying, and you know, their most reliable mainstream media lackeys were saying last year. At the same time, Cyber Reason, who we talked about a lot in video one, were simulating with high-ranking U.S. officials and DHS and the Secret Service and the FBI exactly how that chaos could unfold through various means. So I start off this, I didn't highlight this, but I think it's a really important quote just in general, given what the situation the country is facing. So as World War I drew to a close in Europe, British philosopher Bertrand Russell wrote that, quote, neither a man nor a crowd nor a nation can be trusted to act humanely or to think sanely under the influence of a great fear. I find that very instructive, not just in explaining how 9/11 was used to push through a lot of things that would have normally been unpopular, but how what we're seeing now, this election chaos, keep in mind that it serves a purpose, and that chaos is designed to keep you from thinking normally And, you know, to the benefit of the people who have been planning and gaming this out for years at this point.
If I could add real quickly, just since you brought it up, one of my favorite quotes has always been, and it seems more relevant now than ever, excuse me, speaking of Bertrand Russell, the whole problem with the world is that fools and fanatics are always so certain of themselves and wiser people so full of doubts. That's one of my favorite quotes, and just had to throw it in there because think of how relevant that feels right now. So please continue.
Lots of relevant quotes to describe what's going on now. Here in the intro, I write, over the past several months, remember I wrote this in the end of January of this year, so I'm talking about 2019. Over the past several months and with a renewed zeal in just the last few weeks, anonymous U.S. intelligence officials, dubious experts, and establishment media outlets have crafted a narrative about the coming quote-unquote chaos of the 2020 election months before it even takes place. Per that narrative, certain state actors will use specific technologies to target the quote-unquote American mind in order to undermine the coming presidential election. That narrative holds that those efforts will be so successful that the U.S. will never recover as a democracy. Okay. And as I've said before on the show, talking about continuity of government and how that's been popping up this year, that seems to be a lot of, essentially the end goal of a lot of this pre-planned chaos is to transition the U.S. away from a democracy to another system of government that would normally not be accepted by the American people because it will be authoritarian. But, you know, they have to create the right chaos to destroy U.S. democracy. And I think it's why it's no coincidence then that Philadelphia has been chosen, as we'll show in a little bit, as the epicenter, because that is the recognized nationally anyway as the birthplace of American democracy. So what better place would they want to kill it off than where it was born, right?
It lead to something like technocracy, which we see being built on the other side of this narrative with COVID-19. It kind of converges yet again. You know, these two narratives, don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, are one and the same as I see it.
Right. So some of the headlines that came out last year that seeded these types of narratives included, hackers are coming for the 2020 election and we're not ready. Basically, every U.S. national security leader is warning about foreign interference in the 2020 election. And U.S. intelligence agencies say Russia and China plotting to interfere in 2020 election. And if you actually read the statements from those national security leaders and U.S. intelligence officials at the time, they say, as we'll see here in a moment, no evidence that interference is taking place. They just suspect that it will. And lo and behold, their warnings are right, per themselves. So anyway, so media and intelligence foreshadowed tech-powered doom for 2020. So this all really kicked off last November, Cyber Reason Simulation also that month. And a lot of these media articles we'll be looking at are from around the same time frame too. There was a statement issued by Attorney General Bill Barr, Defense Secretary Mark Esper. This is a joint statement. The acting DHS Secretary, who's not there anymore. Acting Director of National Intelligence, who's also not there anymore. Director of the FBI, Christopher Wray. Director of the NSA, Paul Nakasone. I think that's how you say his last name. Hopefully I'm not wrong. And CISA Director Chris Krebs, who we talked a lot about in video too. And if you, if you want to know what's going on with the hacking narrative they're rolling out now in a big way for hospitals and the election, and the guy that's supposed to be guarding all that is Chris Krebs, you're really going to, I highly recommend going back and watching video too. It is a total Fox guarding the hen house situation with him in charge. Anyway, what that statement said about alleged foreign interference in the 2020 election reads as follows, quote, our adversaries want to undermine our democratic institutions, influence public sentiment, and affect government policies. Russia, China, and Iran and other foreign malicious actors all will seek to interfere in the voting process or influence voter perceptions. Adversaries may try to accomplish their goals through a variety of means, including social media campaigns, directing disinformation operations, or conducting disruptive or destructive cyber attacks on state and local infrastructure. While at this time we have no evidence of a comprise or disruption to election infrastructure, blah, 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 or any of these things that we cite out taking place, we will continue to vigilantly monitor any threats to U.S. elections. So they tell you they have no evidence.
You know what I don't understand is that they've had the capability for something like this long before 2020. Why is it only this year suddenly something we're all so concerned about? You know what I mean? It's not, there's a legitimate discussion and concern concern to be had about outside efforts with cyber attacks. But we have to notice what an absurd focus it all of a sudden is when, even going back to before the 2016 election, there is the ability to do things just like this. So it's just odd that it's such a focus now, or telling, really.
Yeah. So there were a lot of articles about this, BuzzFeed, ABC News, Newsweek, all covering this intelligence statement and saying things, you know, headlines like this, you know, not even questioning U.S. intelligence at all, just being like, well, they said so, so it must be a thing. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate. Anyway, this is from 2019's Worldwide Threat Assessment.
Kendallanian.
Remember? Right. Oh, Kendallanian, our favorite CIA journalist, is the guy writing it. Yes. Good catch there. So as we pointed out, I don't remember which video it was, either one or two. We talked about how 2020 is the first year the CIA did not do their worldwide threat assessment. And it was the first year since DHS was created back in the early 2000s that they instead chose to issue a homeland threat assessment. And we talked about how that was a clear indication from the national security state that there's a pivot from foreign terror to domestic terror. So basically, this this statement that they're talking about in this article is from the worldwide threat assessment from 2019, which was the last one the CIA did. So noticeable how they were talking about the election then, and maybe they knew they wanted issue one in 2020, because their justification for not having one in 2020 is because, well, we may make Trump mad and we don't want to make him mad, so we won't testify. That was their official reasoning, and I call bullshit on that because that's ludicrous. And here's another coverage of the joint statement that I just read out from BuzzFeed, saying basically every national security leader says there's going to be foreign interference. Okay, so we have to trust them, BuzzFeed. Thanks. But there were a lot of other articles besides those. So the New York Times had one last year, or I think it was in January of this year, that warned of imminent chaos and that malevolent foreign actors like the Russians are now stealthier and they're, you know, better at being sneaky with their disinformation. And the New York Times said in January that we're going to have an ugly campaign season marred by hacking and disinformation. And then Wired said last year, in the same time frame I'm talking about, that U.S. election security is still hurting at every level. And a lot of these other articles basically say that, like this one from CSO Online, the problems with America's voting and election infrastructure won't be fixed in time for the election next November, right? So they're basically setting up like things will go wrong. Get ready for it.
Do you notice that the same kind of narrative is being used in, like, say, with the Q discussion, where it's like, well, they're not necessarily breaking the rules anymore. They just learn to go right below it. The same kind of thing here is, it's like they're so good at it, it's almost as if they're not really doing it. But trust us, they're doing it. You know, it's like, they're setting it up to be like, yeah, it makes sense why we can't even notice it or see it or have any evidence, because they're just that good, right? It's this kind of common thing that they don't even need to prove anything anymore. I've been floating that for a long time now, but that just stands out as ridiculous.
Right. So this article in Rolling Stone, that I read the headline earlier, "Hackers Are Coming for the 2020 Election and We're Not Ready," is very important, because a lot of the people we've already talked about, and one of the key people we'll be talking about today, are cited in here, including this guy, Joshua Geltzer, who was the former counterterrorism director for Obama's National Security Council. So this article in Rolling Stone, written by Andy Kroll, states that about the 2020 election, this was written last November 2019, quote, "The reality is that we've made progress since the last election, but we're much less secure than we should be." And then it argues that the goal of these foreign meddlers isn't necessarily to hack voting machines or change results, but, quote, "to merely create the impression of an attack as a way to undermine our faith in the electoral process." That is word for word from Cyber Reason simulations with top national security officials in the U.S. that have been going on for the past 2 years. It's exactly what they gamed out. If this is the only video of our election special that you are watching, go back and watch our previous ones if you're interested in more information.
So they're basically suggesting that Iran, whoever's going to do it, is going to have the ability to have influence to a greater degree, but choose not to, and only create the impression of an attack. How does that even logically make sense with an entity they're painting as like desperate to destroy everything that we are? That makes sense with a group trying to make it appear as if there's an attack, but not really have one, right, such as the U.S. government. I mean, that's just plainly clear to me.
it's worth pointing out the only way this works, like they say there, it's going to work, where it would undermine Americans' faith in the electoral process, and it's just the impression of attack happening. That can only happen if mainstream media amplifies that claim up and drives it home for people. If this was actually a real problem, the answer to not letting that foreign meddling work would be to starve it of attention if it wasn't a real attack, and you know, not promote it so heavily. But we're seeing the opposite.
Excellent.
So clearly, you know, it's something else that's going on here.
Yeah.
So anyway, Joshua Geltzer, who we'll see in a moment, who is intimately involved with seating, you know, advising cities and states throughout the U.S. to bring in the National Guard on and after Election Day now. This is what he had to say last November in 2019 about foreign meddlers. The target is the minds of the American people. In some ways, we're less vulnerable than we were in 2016. In other ways, it's more. Nearly every expert agrees on this. The worst case scenario, and the one we need to prepare for, is a situation that causes Americans to question the bedrock of our democracy, free and fair elections. Since in the past couple months, how often have we heard this repeated over and over and over again? And the origin of this, as we showed before, is Cyber Reason, an intelligence front company with ties to the CIA and Israeli intelligence. That's where this comes from. And a lot of the people facilitating this and involved in those simulations and with Cyber Reason as a company also have a lot of ties to, what do you know, Obama's National Security Council. And we'll be seeing a lot more of that as we go forward in today's video.
I just want to add real quick, Americans have every single reason for decades now to be questioning and have doubts about our democratic process. So this kind of thing is what we constantly see, that Cyber Reason itself, you know, where the agenda we're talking about is something that I would argue preemptively being laid out to blame a foreign entity for something that clearly is an organic issue with what our government is doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. I think the average American has already been at this point for a while, and even with the current election, and they have known this. And so they've created this, essentially what I would argue, this election chaos that was pre-planned as a controlled demolition of U.S. democracy and of the election system, because they know it can't go on without them making changes that would threaten their stranglehold on power in the country, of whether the Democrats, establishment Democrats, or established Republicans. That's why we've seen groups pop up that we'll be talking about soon, like the Transition Integrity Project, which is the DNC and Romney-style Republicans with the RNC, the never-Trumper Republicans, joining forces to facilitate this quote-unquote chaos. It's because it's the only way they can hold on to power, because the American people are sick of both of them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what else can they do? So anyway, as we talked about in video one, this whole messing with a voter's mind thing was put out by Cyber Reason's CEO. If you want to know why I'm calling Cyber Reason an intelligence front company, it's very obvious. But the guy that wrote that blog post for Cyber Reason before the 2016 election took place, it was Cyber Reason CEO Lior Div, who used to be the offensive hacker against nation states for Israeli military intelligence. And he admits that his role at Cyber Reason as its CEO is a continuation of his time in Israeli intelligence. So,
And Whitney went over this extensively in the past two videos. So if you want more on that, it's all there for you guys to check out.
Right. So anyway, in that blog post he wrote even before the 2016 election and Russiagate had even started, he said the easiest way to to undermine an election is to mess with a voter's mind. Okay, so that's where this comes from, this whole idea. Another thing that was mentioned in this joint statement and also in the worldwide threat assessment of 2019 of the CIA regarding the 2020 election was going to be this extreme use of deep fake images that were going to undermine the election. They may be saving this for Election Day, because this was seeded really heavily, not just by these the intelligence officials and these joint statements and things, but by lots of mainstream media reports warning about deep fakes. And because of the controversy about like the Hunter Biden laptop and them saying, oh, it's not real and whatever. I mean, who knows? Any sort of image pops up on Election Day, it could easily be a deep fake. So
there's an entire app. There's an entire app that's been really, and I thought this was very odd, that it's all right. I think in the last 2-3 months, I'm seeing ads everywhere for an app that literally lets you make deep fakes.
Yeah.
Right. And it's interesting. We're going to see this flooded out there. It's another thing that they've telling us is going to happen, and it's going to happen. It's very, very clear.
Right. So if you want to go see some of the ones from last year, talking about deepfakes in the election, they say, as I point out here, that they will be used. They don't say it could be used or it might be used, right? They say it's going to happen. And then you also, and some of those links are here in my report for your convenience. And then, but also that worldwide threat assessment for the U.S. intelligence community from 2019, the last one they've done, specifically highlights deepfakes. This is what it says. Adversaries and strategic competitors probably will attempt to use deepfakes or similar machine learning technologies to create convincing but false image, video, and video files to augment influence campaigns directed against the United States and our allies and partners. This is from a part referencing the 2020 election specifically. And as I point out here, you know, we are trusting, if we want to believe what these people are saying, remember how they lied us into the war in Iraq and numerous other examples. So, you know, when we're talking about these intelligence officials, especially anonymous US intelligence officials and the same outlets that, you know, repeated WMDs are in Iraq and all the stuff before the invasion. I mean, keep this in mind, we shouldn't be trusting these people. Anyway, I highlighted this part, but we're not going to cover it because we really covered it in part two, how the intelligence community and also companies like Microsoft, Cyber Reason itself, or Clear Sky, which we talked about in video two, have been pointing the finger already for 2 years at Russia, China, and Iran with very dubious amounts of evidence, if any evidence, linking those hacks to the state actors they were blaming it on. And so if you're interested in that in particular, I would recommend going to video two. But as an example, I point out here how several articles were run last year by outlets like The Hill, which only cited a single official, Chad Wolf in this case, saying that Russia is going to attempt to interfere in the 2020 elections. And the headline was top U.S. official says Russia will interfere in 2020. And then you have another article that says Russia and China plan to adjust their tactics to hack and influence 2020 elections, cites only Shelby Pearson of the U.S. intelligence community. She's the head of the U.S. intelligence community's like election safety stuff. They cite only her for that claim, but that's the headline they run with, right? So just some more examples of that.
This section
is where I talk all about how Microsoft has been setting this up. The Iran is hacking everything. We already talked about this and why we shouldn't be trusting Microsoft there. And this is all about how Cyber Reason has also been making those same sorts of accusations alongside Microsoft and groups like Clear Sky. But anyway, going back to deepfakes, the best known deepfake creator in the world is funded 100% by Israeli intelligence. The company I'm talking about here is called Canny AI. This is their name. You can go look them up. If you have heard all of the deepfakes that were reported in 2019 and 2018 that got mainstream media play, the video of Mark Zuckerberg saying this controversial statement, basically that's true about himself, right? That was a controversy because was Facebook going to get rid of it or were they going to allow it to stay on because it criticized Zuckerberg? Right, this was created by Canny AI. The video of Richard Nixon giving a speech he never gave was Canny AI. The viral videos right before the UK general election of Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson endorsing each other, that was a deep fake. That was also Canny AI. And another video of world leaders appearing to sing John Lennon's Imagine, also Canny AI, numerous other ones involved them directly. So,
I kind of think that the deep fake will more come into play, not in regard to creating videos that make people look like they're doing things, but will be an excuse used to cover a real crime or a real story. That's kind of the way I see it playing out.
It's very possible. But if a real deep fake does emerge and is blamed on Iran, Russia, or China, this is the company to keep in mind. But I think it's very possible if, for example, there is something that comes out of things, illegal things, for example, going down in a particular battleground state or city regarding voting that doesn't fit the official narrative of what's going on. Well, yeah, it's convenient for them to slap on the deep fake label because they've already set up this narrative that it's going to happen for sure.
Right? And just like they said, too, it's really only about giving the perception of hacking or manipulation. So all they have to, as long as it's contested, that's all that really need to do.
I know. I mean, can you believe how they set this up? I mean, they're smart people, but they also have like infinite funds from U.S. taxpayers and lots of time to plan this stuff out. I mean, they spend all day doing this, and here we are exposing them. Anyway, so Canny AI, as I point out here, is 100% funded by an Israeli startup accelerator called Xcelerator, a joint venture between Tel Aviv University, which has lots of deep ties to Israel's national security state. They're the INSS, which is the security counterterrorism think tank where Ohad Zaidenberg of CTI League, who we talked about in video two, is also at Tel Aviv University. Anyway, so Tel Aviv University and Israeli intelligence agency Shin Bet, sometimes called Shabak. Shin Bet is Israel's domestic intelligence agency, for those that don't know. Just like the U.S., Israel has several intelligence organizations. It's not all Mossad, right? So, anyway, according to Startup Nation Central, which I have written a lot about if you're interested, which is the Paul Singer created organization that promotes Israeli technology startups and they're placing them in important positions in American Silicon Valley companies. Accelerator funded startups participating in the Accelerator program benefit from close mentoring from content and technology experts from the Shabak, meaning Israeli intelligence. And the connection to the Shabak also provides the entrepreneurs with ways to test the capabilities of their technologies. So Israeli intelligence is mentoring Canny AI on their content and their technology, and also allowing Canny AI's deepfake technology to be tested through whatever intelligence, you know, operation is going on there. I mean, it's a very clear connection to an Israeli intelligence, agency. And Accelerator itself is partnered directly with Cyber Reason, which was saying that, you know, simulated deepfakes being used to create chaos in the 2020 election, what do you know? And martial law being declared and all this stuff after the election. We've talked about them before. So I'm not going to go too much in this. Oh, another partner of this Accelerator is Team 8 that we talked a lot about in video two, which recently hired the former director of the NSA and former head of U.S. Cyber Command, Mike Rogers. Also, Accelerator backs an anti-fake news startup called Cyabra. That's AI-driven disinformation protection that has direct ties to Israel's Mossad, and two of its co-founders previously were behind Psy Group, which was actually named in the Mueller report as having attempted to interfere in the 2016 U.S. election by weaponizing quote-unquote fake news. So
just think about if that was any other entity they keep screaming about. It's so obvious how they,
but it wasn't Russia, right?
It's just so clear how these very, very obvious and if reported properly, monumental things that Americans would want to know about are just kind of casually dismissed. It's incredible.
Right. So to wrap this section up and get straight into the Transition Integrity Project, I just want to go briefly through this Rolling Stone article I referenced earlier. And just go down to the part where I highlighted, because just like the CNN article on hacking that we covered in video two, all of the experts are tied up in the same network we've been talking about this whole time. So Joshua Geltzer, as I said earlier, I read his quote earlier, you'll see him in a moment. Anyway, we have another guy quoted here about how having Americans question the bedrock of our democracy is the worst catastrophe that could happen. And this guy is like, how do we recover from that? Blah, blah, blah. Our country would never be the same. They're citing this guy, Michael Daniel, the former cybersecurity coordinator in the Obama White House, who now runs the Cyber Threat Alliance. What do you know? The Cyber Threat Alliance is partnered with these guys that we talked about yesterday, the Global Cyber Alliance. Go watch video two. In the Aspen Institute, a neocon think tank, and also all of these ISACs, information sharing and analysis centers, meant to protect the election infrastructure and the IT infrastructure and all of this other stuff, the multi-state information sharing and analysis center, which also has ties to this group. We cover it in video too. And also MITRE, the US and government contractor that's super shady and had ties to the software side of September 11th.
Almost wild. Like working together, you know, it's weird.
I know. Oh, but that's conspiratorial, Ryan. Anyway.
God forbid finances and benefits used to draw connections between people. Conspiracy theory.
anyone, another person they're citing about how we're not ready for 2020 is Nathan Gleicher, Facebook's director of cybersecurity, who we talked about in video too, because he's part of this shady think tank that we talked about. And he also used to be part of the cybersecurity arm of Obama's National Security Council before becoming the cybersecurity head at Facebook, where he is still there currently and is responsible for pointing the finger and being like, this is Russian, this is Chinese, this is Iranian, and they are meddling. This is the guy that's in charge of making all of those accusations and deplatforming plans. So, and here he is saying, like, this is... he's talking about how we haven't gone far enough, and there's still too many deceptive people, misleading users, and Facebook's working on it, and they're going to clamp down more, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we have another person they're citing here who's also formerly involved in White House Obama era tech policy, once again, and also at Facebook.
Yeah.
And then this Rolling Stone article is straight up saying Donald Trump got elected with the help of foreign interference, meddling he invited, as well as domestic and foreign disinformation. It's not like people hated Hillary Clinton. I mean, it's so absurd.
Right. But that, which is absurd, but think about how crazy it is that they continue to just force in a lie told enough. You're right. That's not been proven. I mean, that's common knowledge now. And yet they just state it as a fact. That should be an issue. Everybody should be pointing that out. And somebody like this should be attacked as not being, you know, journalistic or not doing the right, you know, whatever they try to attack us for doing. You know,
right.
It's so crazy how they keep forcing that in, and get prepared for that exact same thing as we go through this election narrative, you know?
Yeah. They're doing it again now.
Right, exactly.
As you'll see, they're saying there's no way Trump can win the election. It has to be Biden. And yeah, anyway, this is interesting here. So the way they're framing this is Trump is just so bad for cybersecurity that all these people are resigning. But it's interesting. One of the resignations is the head of DHS. Recently leaving DHS to take a top job at Google, just sort of playing into this whole insidious relationship between these national security officials and Google, which has become a real revolving door that is very alarming, just in general. So the last person, this is how the article ends. They're quoting this guy, David Criss. If you watched videos 1 and 2, you would know that David Criss is on an advisor to Cyber Reason, and is also part of this National Security Institute that includes people like Paul Wolfowitz. It includes former CIA directors, former NSA directors, a lot of very powerful national security officials. Lots of U.S. intelligence or military intelligence on there. Anyway, he's there too, and he's currently advising two elements that he won't name, two agencies in the U.S. intelligence community he won't name. He was involved in the FISA, illegal spying and things like that. And also on that National Security Institute, you have two other Cyber Reason employees. We covered this already. But anyway, this is what he's saying the same time that Cyber Reason was doing, simulating Operation Blackout for the 2020 election. So here's what he's saying about Trump. We've got a commander in chief who is at best highly ambivalent and is at worst actively courting its return in 2020. What he's referring to in courting its return is foreign meddling. He's saying Trump is actively courting going to bring back foreign meddling in 2020. This guy who advises Cyber Reason. And he's saying that we need, in order to fight meddling, alleged foreign meddling, it has to be a whole of government, whole of nation effort. So that's interesting. But what's really interesting is his quote at the end, where he says there's a scenario in particular that keeps him up at night. He can easily imagine Trump and his allies challenging county level vote totals across the country and refusing to concede. Okay, this is exactly the narrative that has been set up by the Transition Integrity Project and this other group we're going to be seeing that's tied up with them called ICAP, okay, that are essentially preparing for this and allegedly justifying their war games and plans for extreme chaos, regardless of who wins the election, whether it's Biden or Trump, across the country, okay? And this guy is the one to first set that narrative in particular up. Very alarming, given his connections and direct tie to Cyber Reason. What do you know?
Shocking.
So this is his quote of the scenario that keeps him up at night about Trump. quote, he simply says, "I'm not leaving. I didn't lose. It was rigged." And you can see that we have literally 78 lawsuits going on in 78 different counties and states challenging the result, Chris says. It makes Bush versus Gore look like a nursery school exercise. As we'll see in a little bit, a lot of the people involved directly in the Bush versus Gore case are back and are planning this now for this current election. So, pretty wild, all things considered.
Such an obvious self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, it's very easy to set this up, and then even if it just organically happens, still just blame Trump, because there's nothing to prove what you're saying now either. Right? They're just floating an idea, and then just they're going to make this the case regardless of what happens.
Right.
Pretty obvious.
Right. So this narrative has been set up a long time, and it precedes the Transition Integrity Project, which we can take a look at in a second. But I don't know, Ryan, did you want to show some of the other mainstream media, election seeding that has happened since that article?
Yeah, we can walk through some of the things that we were seeing before, up until this kind of began. But first, I wanted to make it clear here that this is some of the, I wanted to mention these in the beginning, but coming off of the previous videos, that we're clearly seeing these things already play out that we were pointing out, that Whitney's research was making very clear, right? This is from the Advancing Counterintelligence, make sure I say it correctly, and Security Excellence, NCSC. Now it says, new alert from CISA, right? We're just talking about it, and FBI, Iranian advance persistent threat actor identified, obtaining voter registration data. Now, I just don't even understand what's the end game for them getting voter registration data? It doesn't mean anything. It's just about making you think that they're doing something and meddling, and that, you know, it stands out.
Right.
And this is something that Whitney was saying was going to happen.
If you read that alert, they don't explain why they think it's an Iranian. They don't even name the actor. Normally, the APTs or advanced persistent threats that they accuse of hacks, they'll call it APT and they'll have a number at the end. The one they most often link to Iran is APT-35. They don't even say in this warning, advisory or whatever, they don't even say who the group is. And they don't say if it's Iranian or not. And it's worth pointing out, we pointed out CISA's conflicts of interest regarding the Iran hacking narrative, how there's when it has to do with election infrastructure, how, you know, the guy that's running CISA used to be a top guy at Microsoft and has been lobbying for Microsoft's election guard software, and he's guarding election infrastructure and all of this stuff. And Microsoft has been blaming Iran for a lot of hacks that we covered in the last show, that, you know, their explanations for why it's Iran don't hold water if you actually look at it. And the other thing we talked about in video one is how the FBI has directly partnered with the Anti-Defamation League, which has, you know, been called, accurately so, in my opinion, a lobbying arm of Israel's government, which wants us to go to war with Iran before January 20th, 2021. So, obvious conflicts of interest here, but of course we're having mainstream media, as is so often the case today, just taking this advisory and saying, U.S. officials say Iran is meddling in our elections and they're hacking our election infrastructure. And, you know, they're ramping up the fear prior to the event itself, i.e. the election.
Which then just translates to there will be cyber attacks on the election.
Yes.
You know, and that's what we're seeing in these TIP discussions. And that's what usually happens. And even more so, here's another example. And this is another journalist. Iran has successfully hacked into at least one state voter registration data. Again, so the same kind of thing, just kind of flowing around. And here is the one that Whitney shared as well. Iran is attempting to influence our election, from AIPAC, which I just find interesting, seeing as how it's a group that lobbies on behalf of a foreign entity. But sure, our elections, a group of Iranian hackers sent thousands of threatening messages to voters in several states. You know, and of course, this comes from Reuters, same kind of thing. And it comes from the same shoddy, all of this sources back to intelligence entities, unsourced material. And for all we know, didn't actually come from Iran. There's no investigation, right? How many times have they been caught lying about these things in the past? It's just shoddy work, you know, and this is what they continue to do. Now, from February is where and the point being, there's so many of these, I could have done an entire show of these articles, but starting from February going forward, we see a lot of this seeding the narrative we've been talking about. This is Mother Jones. Democrats prove no one has to hack an election to create chaos. It's back in February. Now, this is where I believe they're trying to set the narrative where, you know, it doesn't even matter if there's even really an attack. It's about keeping the idea that it might have happened to question the outcome. right? And that's what this kind of plays on. And this is talking about the app that we saw in Iowa that you know, had ties back to Democrats, obviously, and the idea that it just completely created chaos. There was all this ambiguity about it. They wouldn't show you how it worked behind the scenes. And so that's what it says here. And it says the designers of the app was supposed to simplify it, but it ultimately ended up in chaos. And it says, while there's been voluminous reporting trying to answer that question, for some security experts, the key lesson from Iowa's meltdown is how the episode illustrates one of our biggest fears. Bad actors seeking to interfere in an election don't actually have to rig a voting machine or hack a voter registration database. Again, how does that even make sense? So they're doing this just for fun? I mean, if you're arguing that the objective is to attack our belief in our system, which by the way is already organically happening, wouldn't it make sense to do it catastrophically as opposed to just kind of subtly float some weird case? I mean, that again doesn't make sense to me. And it says, they just have to make it look like they did. And I think this is the idea that it will end up being that, say, the Trump administration or the Biden administration, you know, they have made it appear this way. But it says the last part, what we really saw in Iowa was the manifestation of that idea. You do not actually have to have a cybersecurity incident to really wreak havoc on outcomes in these types of situations. This isn't just about building something that's secure. It's about building something secure and being able to prove in an unimpeachable way that it's secure. Now, it's important because think about how impossible it's to prove anything unimpeachably these days, right? So this is laying the stage for the next year of lawsuits and court, you know, that's what this is building, it seems.
Before you move on, I just wanted to point out that Iowa app was largely funded by Silicon Valley billionaires, including Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, who is also one of Joe Biden's, if not his biggest donor, one of his biggest donors, this election cycle, his campaign for president. And it was him, right? We've seen time and again so many Silicon Valley connections to this effort to create chaos on a national scale during this election. Right. So it's very interesting that the example they're pointing to here, the person responsible for this chaos, okay, was part of the same group of Silicon Valley billionaires who were all pretty tightly connected. I mean, Reid Hoffman is up there with Peter Thiel and Mark Zuckerberg and all of these people, right? That he was responsible for this chaos, but he's not, you know, Reid Hoffman isn't getting in trouble. You know, I mean, it's the Russians and it's right. The Chinese and it's the Iranians, but where is the talk about the Silicon Valley billionaires who were actually meddling in democracy, not just in events like this, but also in social media censorship and their control on the flow of information, among other things, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what's so interesting about this specific discussion is all they're talking about is how confidence in voting securely can evaporate. They did, like, this isn't meant to be, oh, well, the Democrats tried to manipulate it. Oh, it's just a quirky act of incompetence. You know, that's what they want it to be like. And it's like, oh, we're
I would argue this was deliberate.
Well, totally. But that's the idea is that they want to just float this idea that it's like, look, this was just an example of how their accidents can evaporate confidence. But the point there, think about how crazy it is that they're arguing that the idea that the lack of confidence comes from foreign meddling, but then they give you an example of how their shoddy actions evaporate that. It's just, these people are ridiculous.
I know.
But going forward month by month here up until then, here's going to February. And it's entitled Another 2020 Election Simulation Ends in Chaos. Now, this is one Whitney already talked about. Again, just pretending to be anarchist hackers. I have to say how frustrating it is that anarchism is constantly mislabeled and misattributed to chaos. Right. But go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say this is Cyber Reason's last simulation they did. It was in February of this year.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this is the one we went over in a previous video called Operation Blackout. Now, it says they called themselves KOS for Kill Organized Systems, which again, just the idea that that's anarchism, I can't stand that, but I'll get past it.
No, but it fits into the official narrative from the government of who the anarchists are, like, oh, those people rioting and protesting are anarchists and they want chaos and all of this stuff, right?
Despite that fundamentally being contrary to what anarchism actually is. That's why it frustrates me. But they just blend them. So like so many other words we hear about today, they're, you know, just classic words that they kind of co-op and make what they want them to be. Like, for instance, the idea that Trump's campaign or their supporters call themselves a silent majority. I'm like, oh, it's so frustrating how they misuse these things. That's not all what they're, you know, anyway. But going forward, the frustrating part, the interesting part is killed organized systems. You know, it shows you this kind of attack on that it is ultimately chaos, this end goal. And these are groups that there are within, but remember they're trying to frame these things as sort of like tied to outside foreign entities. And it says the man, Jonathan Strym Amit, you mentioned before, was a former member of Unit 8200. I thought that was relevant again today. Mm-hmm. The Israeli military's elite cyber warfare team, which is considered among the best in the world. A team of federal agents and members of local law enforcement were in a room across right across the hall. So as they're gaming this out, and ultimately, as we pointed out, it ends up being chaos. I mean, that's what they ended up coming to the conclusion, and it's all going to be chaos. Operation Blackout. Now, they say it was not the first one. They've done this in the past, but public-private exercises I thought was very interesting. But it says,
go ahead. Oh, sorry. No. Go right there, the end of that first paragraph. This is very relevant when we get into Philadelphia. And in video one, I pointed out some other things that took place in the 2018, the first cyber raise and exercise that I think are also instructive about what's likely to take place in Philadelphia this year. But what Cyber Reason was specifically simulating was this type of city. It was a medium-sized city, but look, a swing state that could make the difference in who takes the presidency. Pennsylvania has been named as that state in this election by media numerous times, as we'll see here, but you've probably already heard it in mainstream media, and that is the exact type of city that Cyber Reason was gaming out with DHS officials, the Secret Service, and the FBI, how to create chaos in a city, an important, medium to large size city, depending on their simulation, in swing states that could make a difference in the presidency. And what's interesting, as I pointed out in video two, the head of the Secret Service in Philadelphia used to follow Bill Clinton around with his security detail during the Clinton Global Initiative, right? Was traveling around with the Clinton Global Initiative, which of course has ties to people like Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein to a significant degree, that particular part of the Clinton post-presidency, Clinton Foundation, Clinton Global Initiative, all of that stuff. And of course, as we know, Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell have deep ties to both U.S. and Israeli intelligence, just like Cyber Reason.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Those ties are so incredibly important to this. And, as well as you've already pointed out, it's important to see that this is not just a one-sided thing, that there's definitely aspects of both sides of the two-party illusion driving this whole thing forward. Mm-hmm. But again, like Cyber Reason's last Operation Blackout, which took place in November, which I thought was interesting just to point out that, first of all, that you won't be able to find it on their website, which I thought was relevant.
Taking it down.
Yeah, in controlling the narrative of these things before. But I thought it was interesting to point out that the red team leader in this previous Operation Blackout that took place in London in 2019 was Yossi Reichman, I believe that's how you'd pronounce it, who has his tweets protected now, which I found relevant, but of course was somebody who is a senior manager in Maglan, a Israeli-based advanced cybersecurity center acquired by Accenture Security in June 2016.
Which is a huge company. That's a multinational, massive tech company.
Mm-hmm. All these ties back to the Israeli government cannot be ignored to the very thing that's gaming out the destruction of our democracy. Mm-hmm. It seems quite relevant.
As we pointed out in other videos, the group here in terms of the intelligence agencies, it's Israeli intelligence, U.S. intelligence, and U.K. intelligence to a large degree. So it's important to keep in mind that those three intelligence agencies have worked together for decades and decades and decades to do various ops in various countries throughout the world. So they've collaborated to create chaos, I guess you could say, in various countries. Including, I probably know this is the best example just because of my, where I live and stuff. But, in Chile, for example, huge involvement of all three of those intelligence agencies in propping up the Pinochet military dictatorship and in the coup where Salvador Allende was replaced with, Pinochet in the first place. Right. So that's just one example. And then Operation Condor and all of that stuff had ties to all three of those intelligence agencies as well. So this is a group that collaborates, and we're not singling out any one country for the haters out there. Okay. This is just where the facts point, and we're just showing all of it to you. Make your own conclusions.
Totally. From my perspective, the reason that's relevant is because of the overwhelming ties that the Israeli government has on the influence of American policy. That's not an opinion.
Right.
France having that influence over our policy, right? Like, so the point is that it's relevant when you see the continuation of the ties back to Israeli cybersecurity, Israeli intelligence, Unit 8, all these people tied to positions that drive policy. And now we're talking about a specific part of the larger picture. And everywhere we look, we continue to see ties back to Israeli intelligence. I mean, that's just basic. It's the people that want to make that out to be something that it's not. that I think we should look into, not whether, you know, not the agendas behind people trying to point out basic facts that you can look up, you know, it's incredible, but your point is right. It's right to point that out. Now, going forward to February, this is an interesting one as well. Now, the point again is showing you these is how they've been seeding this, you know, well before they had any reason to think that this would be chaos, you know, months away and saying way down there, it's going to be chaos. So in that one,
before Biden was even the nominee,
right? That's important because how would they even know that this would end up? I mean, it's clear that they wanted, or at least they wanted us to feel that this may be the case. Now, and to your point, this isn't about the primaries, right? So this, we have yet to even see the field develop yet. And they're already saying, and this was actually the name of this entity, Operation Chaos 2020. And what they're trying to do is essentially what they said, strategically vote in the primary to manipulate. And they were like, you know, voting for Biden, or, you know, as Republicans voting for Bernie so they could mess up Biden and so on. You know, but the point is all the way back then, they're already talking about how that's somehow dishonest and it's all going to be chaos. Going to February again, a chaotic U.S. election could trigger a global crisis. Quickly escalated from now just a U.S. crisis, now it's the world. In February, somehow we know this is going to happen. It says the United States is locked in an escalating strategic rivalry with at least four implicitly aligned revisionist powers. Now, also in February, we already know that they are going to be, you know, it's just ridiculous. China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. Shocking. These countries,
all the countries we don't like.
Right. Big surprise. And of course, not to destabilize everything, but just to, you know, make you feel uncomfortable. But it says these countries all have an interest in challenging the US-led global order, which you could probably say that's an accurate statement. And but, you know, that it's openly happening in front of us, that's different. And 2020 could be a crucial year for them, owing to the US presidential election and the potential change in US global policies that could follow. Now, it says the four revisionists want to undercut, not possibly, but want to, because they know, undercut American hard and soft power abroad by destabilizing the U.S. from within through asymmetric warfare, which is exactly what we're talking about today, using these psyops and you know, manipulating American minds and so on. Now, I would argue, so we're clear, that I think all governments are conducting these things to some degree. I think that's, you know, throughout the whole show, something we should consider. But it's to what degree it's happening and whether or not it's, you know, one-sided, which I don't think it is. It says, if the U.S. election descends into partisan rancor, chaos, disputed vote tallies, and accusations of rigged elections, so much the better for America's rivals. Moreover, some countries have a particular interest in removing Trump. The acute threat that he poses to the Iranian regime gives it every reason, they say, to escalate the conflict with the U.S. in the coming months. And of course,
it's Israel's government that's openly saying they want the U.S. to get in war with Iran in this time frame. So I guess that guy decided to leave that out.
Yeah, just casually, you know, that entire other half of the story. Now, of course, it says war between U.S. and Iran. See how quickly it just jumped from these might be possible entities to Iran. You know, between U.S. and Iran, war is likely this year, they say. The current calm is the one before the proverbial storm. And of course, as you point out, they continue to reference Qasem Soleimani. That's going to be why, after, you know, as you pointed out, months and months ago, and they've actually...
And they already retaliated, right, in January. Exactly. Mm-hmm. They already did something, and they were like, we're done, but they just in September is when this started again. They're like, they're going to do something. Very disconcerting.
I should point out that they put out the idea that this wasn't going to be the last thing they did. So that's important for us to know, but that still doesn't justify that we can blame anything that then happens afterward without any evidence on Iran, you know? But it says, but open aggression is not really an option at this point, given the asymmetry of conventional power. China's immediate response to U.S. containment efforts will likely take the form of cyber warfare. In February, right? There are several obvious targets. Chinese hackers and their Russian, North Korean, and Iranian counterparts, because they're all just working together, could interfere in the U.S. election by flooding Americans with misinformation and deep fakes. With the U.S. election,
there's a new access of evil.
Right. Right. I mean, so we're being told, you know, even though it's not as all tight knit as they try to make it out to be. I mean, arguably you can see like China and Russia having their connections, even Iran and China, but it's not all as clear cut as they want to make it out to be. But it says with the U.S. electorate already so polarized. And again, that's because of their problems and their malfeasance and their bad policies, not because Iran or because Russia gives us truth as they want us to believe, which, you know, no one's arguing that what Russia tried to show us to influence the election wasn't true. It's just that they tried to show it to us, which even though it wasn't Russia. But anyway, It says that with the U.S. electorate already so polarized, it's not difficult to imagine armed partisans taking to the streets to challenge the results, leading to serious violence and chaos. Now, I ask you, of all the other things that they pointed out, you could argue that some of those things were logical jumps, but to think that how would they already be discussing armed partisans back in February? What do you think?
Because they knew. Because they're the ones making it. We can, in the interest of time, if you want, I can start getting into that in the TIP now.
Let me just fly through the rest of these here. Sure. Just keep going. We have this was March. Odds of a contested November election are on the rise. Long before the advent of COVID-19 and the havoc it is playing with the right and opportunity to vote. So now we're seeing the COVID aspect play in, and the point of this is to drive the idea through the narrative to justify mail-in voters, which will then be used to challenge the election. You can see how it's all going. Playing with the right and opportunity to vote, there was fears that another close presidential election like 2016 might create something of a crisis of legitimacy. In part, those fears arose from the scattered evidence of skullduggery, of course, some with a Russian accent, in favor of Donald Trump in 2016. You know, not that the other side won't do it, despite stating that in the TIP document that Whitney talked about. No, just Donald Trump. The odds of a contested general election, not just by Trump, but by the elements of both parties have gone up, right? Mm-hmm. It's all the way back now going forward to continuing April 1st. Election chaos, coronavirus fear of voting could keep people from the polls. I had your image in front of it, but I think that's all I had in there. And this is interesting. This is even the Globe and Mail. So even Canada's chiming in and saying the 2020 U.S. election is a disaster waiting to happen. Says, what might he do this time? It's all about Trump, right? And it's all about setting the same thing on setting the same narrative about the Trump bad guy idea. This one, same thing. Experts warn of a meltdown. And this one is from May. Every single month we go forward. The House passed. This was interesting, by the way, the idea of the $400 million in March to states to boost their election systems. Of course, this was pretty much about mail-in voting. Except, you know, if it was about setting up protection for mail-in voting, why did they make it seem like a large election system funding, right? I mean, it seems interesting and intentionally opaque, right? Mm-hmm. And here, but for those that might be interested, I'll include this in the show notes so you can see that it came from the CARES Act, which, by the way, was supposed to go to you and your business. It instead went to mail-in ballots. I mean, how did that even play in with COVID-19? Don't ask questions. They took your money, right? Election Day 2020 could yield a catastrophic mess, according to the Washington Post. June, coming on to July, 8 big reasons why everything could go to hell. And of course, it's all the same things we've been telling you. And this one is from July. And so is this one. Things could get very ugly. Experts fear post-election crisis as Trump sets the stage to dispute the results of November. Now, it's just very clear how they've been laying these out. And again, like I said, there's so many examples of this.
But this is a good overview. But I think we need to move on, if that's okay, to the to the TIP people. So I will bring them up here in just a moment. Pardon me. So yes, so this is my article on the Transition Integrity Project. You can find it on my website, Unlimited Hangout. Bipartisan Washington insiders reveal their plan for chaos if Trump wins the election. And it's important to point out that this bipartisan group didn't just reveal a plan for chaos if Trump wins the election. It was how to create chaos under numerous different election scenarios, whether it was a Biden win, a Trump landslide win, or a narrow win for either Biden or Trump. Okay, so like pretty much any scenario that could happen based on vote tallies, they gamed out how to produce chaos from any of those particular scenarios. I focused on the Trump winning one because it's the one that undermines their stated narrative for why they have to simulate and game this stuff out the most. Okay, so with that being said, I'll just start off. So a group of Democratic Party insiders and former Obama and Clinton era officials, as well as a cadre of never Trump neoconservative Republicans, have spent the past few months conducting simulations and war games regarding different 2020 election doomsday scenarios. Per several media reports on the group called the Transition Integrity Project, or TIP, they justify these exercises as specifically preparing for a scenario where President Trump loses the 2020 election and refuses to leave office, potentially resulting in a constitutional crisis. So that's how they frame their reason for existing. However, according to the TIP's own documents, even their simulations involving a clear win, a landslide win, for Trump in the upcoming election resulted in a constitutional crisis, as they predicted the Biden campaign would make bold moves aimed at securing the presidency regardless of the election result. In these war games, the role of Joe Biden was played by John Podesta, who was Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign manager. So that's crazy. Anyway, members of the TIP met in June, but it wasn't publicly reported until July, by the way. They waited a while to make it public that they'd been doing this, okay? They met in June to conduct four war games that simulated a, quote, dark 11 weeks. Interesting choice of words considering all the dark winter narrative seeding that we've been seeing. A story for another day. Anyway. A dark 11 weeks between Election Day and Inauguration Day, in which Trump and his Republican allies used every apparatus of government to hold onto power, and Democrats took to the courts and the streets to try and stop it, according to a report from the Boston Globe. But as has been pointed out, and even before I wrote on the TIP, some conservative or pro-Trump media outlets reported on the TIP, but didn't report on the particular scenario I talk about here. But they did note that... basically, there were calls for Biden not to concede no matter what the election results were. And then Hillary Clinton, not that long after this took place, went on Showtime and gave an interview. And she said, yeah, Biden shouldn't concede. And if we drag this out as long as possible, Biden will eventually win, is essentially what she said. I have the quote and the link to that interview in this article for those that are interested. So moving on, in the TIP's clear Trump win scenario, which is on page 17 of the document I link to here, this is what the document looks like, the official TIP document. It'll all be in the show notes for those that are interested. Joe Biden, again played by Podesta, who was also chief of staff to Bill Clinton at one point, retracted his election night concession and subsequently convinced three states with Democratic governors, which in the exercise were North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Michigan, to ask for recounts. Then the governors of Wisconsin and Michigan sent separate slates of electors to counter those sent by the state legislature to the Electoral College, which Trump had won in an attempt to undermine, if not prevent, that win. So this move here, the first move, flagrantly illegal, as we'll see in a little bit, they are essentially framing now in media reports, well after this started to come out, the TIP was revealed in July, they're essentially framing this dueling electors narrative, different electors being sent to the Electoral College by governors, basically undermining the Democratic results of their state, that the governors, if they don't like the result, will send a different set of electors, not the ones that the people in their state elected, but the ones the governor choose. They'll send those to the Electoral College to undermine what goes on. So that is definitely a recipe for chaos.
Important to point out that this, I've been seeing this pop up in the discussions of this whole Ground Zero and, you know, where it's all going. Mm-hmm. And that one of these big discussions, even back to 2016, is that it's been revealed that these electors in Electoral College ultimately aren't even obligated to, in many cases, to actually go, yeah. They vote for who they ultimately want to vote for, or, you know, and that seems directly contradictory to the idea that we have any influence over the direction. And so that's also another aspect now being tossed in there, that the popular vote versus the Electoral College, which could add more, you know, chaos to this as it goes forward. And that's already being seeded in the discussion.
Right. Well, I think they want to create chaos on the Electoral College. This is separate from my article, but we've heard ever since 2016, oh, we need to abolish the Electoral College and make it a popular vote system because Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, but not the Electoral College. So I think they're definitely, based on, you know, what these DNC officials and never Trump Republicans and neocons are gaming out here, it's very likely, given especially the what the mainstream media is saying now about this whole dueling electors thing, that they'll have a lot of chaos take place, among other places, in the Electoral College itself as a way to justify its elimination. But anyway, after doing this whole dueling electors thing, the Biden campaign orchestrating that, by the way, per the TIP's own war games, involving top DNC officials that have ties to the Biden campaign. I just want to stress that here. I mean, this is so nuts. The next move they make is even crazier. The Biden campaign then encouraged Western states, particularly California, but also Oregon and Washington, to secede from the United States unless congressional Republicans agreed to a set of quote unquote structural reforms that were developed with the advice from President Obama. And those reforms are the following: give statehood to Washington, DC and Puerto Rico, which are obviously would be Democrat strongholds. Divide California into five states to more accurately represent its population in the Senate. Obviously, California is a supermajority Democrat state, so that would essentially game the Senate for the Democratic Party for the foreseeable future. It requires Supreme Court justices to retire at 70 and eliminate the Electoral College. Like I was just saying, they've been wanting to do this for a long time. So essentially, they're threatening that three major states will leave the United States. Remember, secession was what Civil War was all about back in, you know, the American Civil War in the 1800s. And they're setting up a scenario where we'll have these states succeed and potentially create another Civil War type scenario under those same lines, unless you give us these structural reforms that would ensure that Democrats win elections they wouldn't normally win through, you know, something just... I mean, it's like mafia tactics here.
Right. So if they don't get what they want to rig the game so they can win later.
Yeah. So as I said before, this group frames themselves as, oh, Trump is a despot and he's authoritarian. So we have to conduct these war games about how to stop him when he tries to become a dictator. That's how they frame this, right? And look at the stuff they're gaming out if they lose. They clearly don't give a flying bleep about democracy. I just want to make that really clear. So... Oh, I just sort of pointed that. So basically, these are terms that Republicans would probably never agree to, unless they really had, a knife to their throat, basically. So who knows? But anyway, that wasn't even enough for these people in this war game. The Biden campaign, remember, this is John Podesta, subsequently provoked a breakdown in the joint session of Congress on January 6th, because remember, this is simulating the time between Election Day and Inauguration Day, by getting the House of Representatives to agree to award the presidency to Biden. Okay, so the Biden campaign gets the House of Representatives to agree to award the presidency to Biden, even though he didn't win the election and it was a landslide for Trump. Wow. So
justified because they perceive him to be a despot. Like, again, to your point, that's the most undemocratic thing, but it's only because it's the same way we perceive our foreign policy. They get to break the rules because they're the good guys. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they view themselves. Right. Well, I mean, if you just think about it though, this is going slightly off topic, but why do these people hate Trump? Because they always say he's not presidential. He doesn't speak presidentially and he doesn't act like a president. They want another, like, you know, guy like Obama that like can talk really smooth and like be a convincing mask for empire, whereas Trump really ripped that mask off in a lot of ways and embarrassed them. And also he shit talks the media all the time, which they obviously don't like. So anyway, as I said, that was sort of separate. So anyway, this whole breakdown in the session of Congress, they base this on the dueling electors thing, the alternative pro-Biden submissions sent by pro-Biden governors. And then the Republican Party did not consent, obviously, because Trump won the election. And this clear Trump win scenario, per the TIP, who's trying to save democracy from Trump, they create a constitutional crisis when Trump gets a landslide election victory, resulting in no president-elect being inaugurated on January 20th. And it was, they say in this, in their exercise, it's unclear what the military would do in this situation. They obviously included that to sort of hint that the military would have to step in, right? Because why else would you include that? And it makes sense when you look at Rosa Brooks, who's the co-founder of the TIP. It has two co-founders, Rosa Brooks being one of them. And I think she's the most important one. Personally, she used to be an advisor to the Trump era Department of Defense and also the Obama era State Department when it was headed by Hillary Clinton. She's currently a fellow at the New America think tank. Who funds them, you may ask? Well, let's look at their website. You may see some familiar names. How we're funded, our funding transparency table. Eric Schmidt and Wendy Schmidt. Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google, the Rockefeller Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates, Ford Foundation, the U.S. State Department, the Omidyar Network, Pierre Omidyar, the owner of PayPal Silicon Valley, Jeffrey Skoll, who worked with Pierre Omidyar at eBay and is also a Silicon Valley billionaire, Reid Hoffman, responsible for the Iowa caucus, Shadow whatever app that created chaos that you were just talking about, and who's also Joe Biden's biggest, one of his biggest donors this cycle. JP Morgan Chase, Craig Newmark, who we talked a lot about yesterday, another Silicon Valley billionaire originally behind Craigslist. So this is funded by Silicon Valley. And if you read, it says it at the top. So we are dedicated to renewing the promise of America by continuing to the quest to realize our nation's highest ideals honestly confronting the challenges caused by rapid technological and social change and seizing the opportunities those changes create. This think tank is called New America. Okay, it's funded by Silicon Valley billionaires like Eric Schmidt, who have openly stated they want to remake America, okay, in an authoritarian style. Just look at Eric Schmidt and the National Security Commission artificial intelligence. So they're all about gaming out. This foundation is all about how to seize the opportunities created by the rapid technological and social changes created by Silicon Valley itself, and how to remake society by capitalizing on the changes the people that fund this crap create.
You could also call that order out of chaos.
Yes. Well, that's essentially what they say it is, right? Just kind of crazy. So anyway, that's who the lady that founded the TIP is, tied up with them. 2 weeks after Trump was inaugurated, Rosa Brooks, who created the TIP, wrote in Foreign Policy that one of the ways to remove Trump from office before the 2020 election was a military coup. Okay, so the fact that these people are ending their simulation with a clear Trump win saying, I wonder what the military would do. Well, just look no further than their co-founder for how that might take place, because she's already on the record saying what the military should do with regards to a Trump presidency. More on Rosa Brooks, as I mentioned earlier, the Pentagon and Hillary Clinton's State Department. She was also general counsel to the Open Society Institute, part of the Open Society Foundation, which is funded by George Soros, if you don't know what that is. Zoe Hudson is the TIP's director. She was a senior policy analyst and liaison between the Open Society and foundations in the U.S. government for 11 years, including the period where the Open Society Foundations was involved in the Obama-era coup against Ukraine, Honduras, and other countries, that's just insane. I mean, she was directly involved, this lady, in doing color revolutions in other countries via the U.S. State Department and other parts of, you know, the Obama administration. So basically, the TIP is gaming out a color revolution for the United States. And that is what we're seeing take place to a significant degree. And it's just very alarming. And as I point out here, the Open Society Foundations was involved in numerous color revolutions. I have links here for people that are interested in that and the ties directly between George Soros and Hillary Clinton, that he was directing her policy with about unrest in particular countries, telling them how to exploit the unrest in particular nations.
Idea of the color revolution aspect to this is very, it's developing in my mind to be something that's very prominent. We're going to touch on another group as we go forward in the same light. It seems as if all these entities that have nothing to do with elections or COVID-19 are seemingly kind of sticking their fingers in this whole thing and creating what looks like exactly that, a color revolution. It's pretty interesting. Right.
So in addition to that, Rosa Brooks is also a scholar at West Point's Modern War Institute, where, what do you know, she focuses on the relationship between the military and domestic policing. And she's also part of Georgetown University's innovative policing program. And she's also a part of the Open Society Foundation-led push, I recommend reading this link here for more information, to capitalize off of legitimate calls for police reform like those we've been seeing this year to justify the creation of a federalized police force under the guise of defunding and eliminating local police departments. So when you hear about establishment Democrats in different states, governors, mayors, whatever, pushing to defund police departments, that is a lot of that goes back to this plan to not only federalize police forces, but give police a bunch of high-tech surveillance tools and claim that's reform. I'm hoping to do a report on this in the future, but I have so much going on that it'll be might be a couple weeks.
This is why you've got people like Biden and Kamala Harris being the people somehow managing to be driving.
But they're the ones promoting
defunding police. That's my point. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, if you actually look at the people that are involved with the Biden Harris like police reform strategies and stuff, it's that same stuff: federalizing police and giving them a bunch of high tech tools to police without them actually having to interact with alleged criminals or whatever, so that they don't engage in acts of police brutality. Instead, everything that just becomes like super high tech, right? So that's how they're framing it. I mean, it's messed up. So anyway, I just point out here how the other co-founder is this guy, Nils Gilman, used to work for Salesforce, another Silicon Valley company that's actually very closely tied to the World Economic Forum. He now works at something called the Begruen Institute, where he says he's building, quote, a transnational network of philosophers, technologists, policymakers, i.e. politicians, and artists who are thinking about how artificial intelligence and gene editing are transfiguring what it means to be human. And of course, the Begruen Institute has ties to people like Eric Schmidt, who also fund New America, and Steve Schwartzman of Blackstone Capital. So, I mean, this is some wild stuff because we have Eric Schmidt here too. Eric Schmidt, I mean, people hated on Bill Gates a lot over the course of this year. I think I said this in the last video too, but we really need to start paying attention to Eric Schmidt and what he's doing. So, So here is New America, where Rosa Brooks works, saying we need data to rebuild trust in the police. Okay, the high tech push for police reform by giving them access to more data and using, you know, intelligent search platforms like Palantir and all this stuff are going to make our data better, or our police better and fairer, and we can start trusting them more, and it'll end police brutality, giving them these surveillance tools, even though there's no evidence for that actually being
unrealistic claim. The more that we have, the more transparency we get, such as body cams, the more we end up seeing the problems. So they're arguing that we give them more control over the data and it'll just make them more trustworthy.
Or what about this? We have Stanford University, which is also tied up with Silicon Valley to a huge degree. Remember Peter Thiel, Palantir came out of Stanford, Google came out of Stanford, among others. Anyway, they're saying if done right, artificial intelligence would make policing more fair. It would be inclusive and reflect our values. I mean, okay. No thanks. I don't think RoboCop gives a flying, I'm swearing too much. I don't think RoboCop cares very much about our values. I'll just leave it there. And then another example, because this is seriously what they have been trying to repurpose legitimate calls for police reform as, because this is what they've wanted the whole time. What current police reform efforts lack, a call to federalize the police. At the same time, you also had people on the right. You had Bill Barr of the Department of Justice. You had Chad Wolf of DHS of the Trump administration, the right, saying we need to federalize police to respond to the riots. And then you have the people supporting the rioters and the protesters and whatever also saying, let's federalize. Oh, isn't that weird that a contentious political divide issue, both the left and the right want the same solution? Well, it's obvious that the national security state that's bipartisan has the solution in mind, and they're manufacturing the crisis to get us to accept it.
Yeah,
federalized police force is bad news.
Ron Paul makes this a very clear art. He's been pointing this out for decades. The idea that a common practice, such as the Patriot Act, is to basically frame, like, so we have an issue, right? We are unhappy with the police. So they come out with something that they frame as solving that problem, which all it ultimately does is enshrine the problem into law, which is exactly what that is. And so then all of a sudden they go, yeah, we solved the problem. You see, it's no longer illegal. Right, but people think they solved it, which was helping people, but that's not where this goes. And this is a classic problem reaction solution scenario.
Right. So in addition to the TIP, we have this other group that people need to start paying attention to, because these are the people enacting that are going to that are setting up really the chaos in cities and states around the country that the TIP gamed out and predicted. The people that are actually making this happen are also tied to the TIP, as you'll see in a moment. They're at Georgetown University, just like Rosa Brooks' innovative policing program. Georgetown also has this institute that was created in 2017 directly by people from the Obama administration that hated Trump and were responsible for the FISA warrants against the Trump campaign, were involved in setting this up, by the way. I was tipped off about this group by Raul Diego, who writes at Mint Press News, and he's going to be doing a report about them, so I'm not going to go too in-depth on them, but they're called the Institute for Constitutional Advocacy and Protection. They were made in August of 2017. They have been very busy making guidance for law enforcement about the 2020 election, guidance for election officials, more guidance for law enforcement, video recording in or near polling places, fact sheet on voter intimidation laws, fact sheets for all 50 states about barring unauthorized private militia groups, all justifying this under, they claim that they were created in response to the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, and everything they do regarding combating militias in these different states is, you know, inspired by that particular event.
Remember that militias are an inherently constitutional right. You know,
well, and so they don't think so. They don't think so.
They don't get to think anything about it. It's inherent, right? So that's the frustrating part, is they frame this. And of course, it has nothing to do with Charlottesville. This is something that's been, that's started when Trump discussed the idea of having these poll watchers. And that's, this is being set up to create the conflict that will inevitably come, because they have a right to be there. And now suddenly they're taking that away, right? So that's
right.
Perfect. Plays it out.
So this group, which is called ICAP, Georgetown's ICAP, okay, if you go to their Our Work tab, in 2019, last year, you may notice that all they really did was make op-eds, publish newspaper pieces, and then June of this year rolls around and they start getting very active in telling local officials to clamp down on private paramilitary activity, which is how they frame militias. They call them paramilitary groups.
Because paramilitary is not listed in the declaration or in the Constitution, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, they, we'll see how they get around that issue in a moment, but this is important because this is the month the TIP started gaming this stuff out and this partisan ground war post-election business, which is also in the TIP's other simulations and the Trump, clear Trump election one. I didn't really focus on that in my report because I was focusing on other issues, but they talk about dueling protest in cities and states throughout the country. The TIP does as a part of the recipe for chaos, this sort of ground war of dueling protests. And right after they game that out is when these guys start being active really this year, and look at all they have done since then. It's all the same, this private military, private paramilitary, as they call it, activity over and over again to different states throughout the country. I mean, sending letters to local officials, all these fact sheets, I mean, way more active than they've been in previous years, all starting when the TIP began or first did their simulations. ICAP, the
challenge,
by
quite
the way,
that it had anything to do with Charlottesville, right? The timing is right there for us to see.
Right. So they're also, this ICAP is partnered with the DFR lab, which is the Atlantic Council, their digital forensic research lab that likes to label everyone that they don't like as Russian bots. They also work with Bellingcat, the DFR, but the Atlantic Council, you know, that's funded by NATO, the US government, the UK government, among other things. So, I mean, they're partnered
Facebook
pretty directly.
That's
right. And, yeah. And the Atlantic Council are Facebook fact checkers. Again, the Silicon Valley thread is just so persistent throughout all of this stuff. So the Atlantic Council and ICAP together are going to, throughout the election this year, monitor the nexus between increasing extremist engagement online and voter intimidation or potential for other disruptions. This is a recipe for mass deplatforming, especially since this particular lab is involved in fact checking with Facebook already and has been for years, and they will be doing that to a much larger extent, we can expect. This is an example of some of the things that they, letters they've been sending. This one is to Erie, Pennsylvania, which is named in some of these reports we'll be showing later as a ground zero location for 2020. And they're basically talking about the different laws in Pennsylvania and please partner with us and we'll tell you what to do. So anyway, this is who ICAP is, their board. The board chair is the managing member at Kleiner Perkins, who leads Kleiner Perkins' venture practice. Kleiner Perkins is probably the largest venture capital firm, one of the most established in Silicon Valley, responsible for the rise of lots of big name Silicon Valley companies. I believe Facebook is among those. They also got in trouble because Ghislaine Maxwell used to attend their parties, even though it was widely known at the time that she was involved with Jeffrey Epstein. So, I mean, this is straight from the former CEO of Reddit, right? She says, we knew about her supplying underage girls for sex when she was invited. Okay, so that's the type of stuff that goes on at Kleiner Perkins. And who else is at Kleiner Perkins? Colin Powell and Al Gore. That's normal for them to be at the Silicon Valley venture capital firm. Anyway, the board vice chair, co-founder and CEO of Slack, very involved with eBay, that's Pierre Omidyar, and Jeffrey Skoll. Condé Nast, a major publication of media outlets, and IBM, which is a tech company, as we've been pointing out in previous videos, very close ties to the CIA. This guy is also a board member. He used to be in the IDF, he's Israeli, and he worked on the domestic campaigns for Al Gore the Gore-Lieberman campaign in 2000, and also Ehud Barak's 2001 campaign in Israel for prime minister. At that time, of course, Ehud Barak and years after, intimately involved with Jeffrey Epstein and the Jeffrey Epstein scandal, and also involved in Carbine 911 and places like that. let's see here, Alex Burns, a lobbyist who goes between Silicon Valley and Washington. Her strategies firm is called Bay Bridge, like the bridge between Silicon Valley and Washington, D.C. She was also involved with Al Gore's 2000 presidential campaign, something you'll notice a lot with ICAP here. Deputy assistant and deputy counsel to the president and National Security Council legal advisor in the Obama administration. Yet another Obama National Security Council connection. The CSIS, Center for Strategic and International Studies, we talked a lot about in video two, also involved in the Clinton administration and the Pentagon. Former Congress member who's vice president of the Aspen Institute, a neocon think tank, and also Council of Foreign Relations. And remember who this guy earlier from the Rolling Stone interview, he was talking about how 2020 election chaos is inevitable. He's founding executive director of ICAP. And as previously mentioned, he was senior director for counterterrorism on Obama's National Security Council. And I just realized that in talking about the TIP, I didn't go into some of their other members. So I'm just going to hop back there for a hot second to talk about them. So some of the members there, sorry, at the TIP, just so I can sort of flesh out who the tie overs between ICAP and the TIP. Okay. Michael Chertoff is part of the Transition Integrity Project. We've talked a lot about him in past videos. He pops up a lot. So is the former chief of staff to Colin Powell, Lawrence Wilkerson, a former chairman of the RNC, and you have a lot of media people, David Frum of The Atlantic, Bill Kristol, Project for New American Century, The Bulwark, Max Boot of The Washington Post, John Podesta, Donna Brazile of the DNC, the people from the Lincoln Project, also the neocon American Enterprise Institute, where people like John Bolton work, Norm Ornstein, and former Secretary of Defense under Obama.
There's a lot of Chuck Hagel. Notorious people in that list. It's just
yes,
bad
yes, very bad. And also the fact that Wilkerson, in talking about the Transition Integrity Project, admits that everything they do is very, very close, whole, and confidential. Okay. So sorry that I forgot to mention them there. Let me go back here for a second. Right. So lots of ties.
A few times in the past, so I'm sure people are familiar with it.
Right, right. So basically what you're seeing here on the board alone, you have Silicon Valley, Obama era, or Clinton, Obama and Clinton national security officials, just like the TIP, right? A lot of those same organizations overlapping to a considerable degree here. Going back to this board member here, I forgot I had this up. Sorry, just so much information. If I go back up here to the Israeli guy, this is from Mondo Weiss. So the Egyptian coup regime of al-Sisi, the Egyptian dictator that was largely installed by US and Israeli national security states and what took place there, he has, the PR firm has ties to the Clinton family and the state of Israel, because this particular guy, Eric Ben-Zvi, who's on the board of ICAP, worked for Bill Clinton and Al Gore during the 2000 stuff. And he also used to be in the IDF. And also, as is pointed out here, lobbying for the al-Sisi dictatorship, which is pretty crazy. So anyway, I think ready to move on. So this guy is the faculty chair of ICAP. So he's the guy that's, you know, the board obviously is not going to be as involved in the day-to-day dealings of the group as the people that actually, you know, are in the faculty and like running it, right? So the board is like more advisory or charting out the general direction of what the center does. Here's their faculty chair, Neil Katyal, I guess is how you say his name. Anyway, he is the guy that defended John Ashcroft, the Bush era attorney general, for his abuses and the war on terror. This is the guy that was defending him and won and was like, you know what? All those abuses you did in the name of the war on terror, that was fine. And you shouldn't be accountable at all. This is the guy that defended him. He's in charge of this thing. So he was also national security advisor to the U.S. Justice Department, and I think it was under Clinton, and then was commissioned by Clinton to write a report on the need for more pro bono legal work. And as we'll see here, ICAP does all of its advising to all these states and cities ahead of the 2020 election pro bono also. How nice of them. But what's important here is that this guy was co-counsel in the Supreme Court election dispute of 2000 on the side of Al Gore. And as we'll see, a lot of this ground zero election litigation stuff that they're framing taking place in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania in particular, they compare to a huge degree to this exact dispute where this guy, and by the way, we'll see that ICAP directly partnered with the people in Philadelphia in a little bit. He's the guy that did that, the 2001 dispute, right? So, I mean, they're really setting this up. Again, executive director is this Geltzer guy who last year was quoted in Rolling Stone saying, they're going to mess with the American mind and democracy will never recover. That guy. Mm-hmm. Here he is, founding executive director. We already talked about him. He's also on the Council of Foreign Relations, another thread that we have seen again and again. He also writes in David Frum's The Atlantic from the TIP, among other places, Foreign Policy, which is the magazine of the Council on Foreign Relations. Just so many. Anyway, this lady is important too because she's doing a lot of the groundwork for the stuff between states and cities, including Philadelphia. Okay, and she used to be Assistant Attorney General for National Security at the U.S. Justice Department during the time between Obama and the Trump administration. If I remember correctly, because I'm not the one reporting on her specifically. I'm just bringing this up in the video because I was, as I mentioned, told, tipped off about this group pretty recently by Raul Diego. And he said that this lady, and I would encourage people watching to look this up, was involved with some of this Obama administration targeting of the Trump campaign that was very contentious for pro-Trump supporters and the abuse of the FISA courts and all of this stuff. So apparently she was involved in that. So that's pretty significant. So moving along, this is from July, not long after the TIP went public with their whole simulations and stuff. So this is how they launched their toolkit to, they say, prevent violence at protests and rallies. And they talk about here, okay, so their resources. So not only are they producing documents that are sent that are for all 50 states and all these different cities, one of the resources they're marketing to those cities, those governors, state governors, and those city mayors and leaders that they're lobbying is a new coalition of the nation's leading law firms that have offered to work with pro bono with communities facing threats of political violence at protests and rallies with a specific focus on the 2020 election. Okay, but this coalition is not just law firms, as you'll see in a moment. And here we have, you know, Mary McCord, who I just went over. She's the main person heading the public head of this initiative for ICAP. But as you will see, the coalition they've set up, here are the law firms they name, but also involved is the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, who of course is also partnered with the FBI on their counterterrorism task force that, as we pointed out in the other video, has now moved from entrapping Muslim Americans to create fake terror plots and is now doing it to white American males in order to set up this narrative of white supremacist terror ahead of what they said at that same hearing. They announced that is the new 9/11 that we are on this doorstep of. And so the ADL is involved with that, and now they're also here. And they're working together to address political violence and extremism in American democracy. And if you know anything about the ADL, I mean, the fact that they are involved in this is highly alarming.
Yeah, as you're going through there, I'm thinking to myself, like, so what's the benefit here to these law firms? And, you know, what's the end game here? And then, if you know, when you see the ADL tied in there, we talked about the drive against Iran and how Iran's tying with the election. And you can see how this whole narrative is being driven by the same characters if you dig into these stories. You know, it's very, very apparent.
Right. Well, what's weird is that one of the main law firms is this Akin Gump, and they're considered to be the most high paid, prestigious law firms in the country that pay more than anything else. They also, out of other law firms, give the most money to federal politicians at the national level. 60%, I think in 2012, a majority of it went to Democrats. So, yeah, but they, you know, donate a lot to powerful politicians. So would that have any role in, you know, politicians they funded that are currently in power being more receptive to, you know, working with this coalition and following their advice about what to do in the advance of the 2020 election and the unrest that will be taking place? So,
It draws, you know, to the mind the idea of the discussion of the one you mentioned before about protecting hospitals pro bono, which has similar ties. You know, it's interesting.
So this is the guy from the ADL, and what he's saying here is that in these turbulent times, civil society leaders and organizations like the ones working with ICAP on this project are the safety net for communities nationwide. So they're framing themselves as, you know, a bulwark against the chaos. But as we'll see in a moment, it's not quite like that. All right, so this is how they explain, ICAP explains militia laws, if you actually read between the lines here. Let's see. So according to ICAP at Georgetown Law, while the U.S. Constitution and some state laws use the term militia to refer to able-bodied citizens who may be called upon by state and local governments for a specific need, private citizens have no legal authority to put themselves in a position of power without being called upon by the government to do so.
You realize how incredibly insulting that is? Because the point is the people are the ones that appoint the government to power, not the other way around. And it's incredible that they try to frame it that way. That's just fundamentally, they're misrepresenting what the Constitution says, as they so often do.
Yeah, but this
Second
is,
Amendment, same way.
This is very dangerous. I mean, this is a very, this can be abused in a lot of ways, this argument they're making. Anyway, they said, even in a state that has no constitutional provisions, that has only constitutional provisions but no criminal statutes, it still means the activities are unlawful, meaning a militia, like a regular person militia. Which, so, I mean, for the existence of the United States as a country until relatively recently, militia was not perceived in the way that she is arguing it is.
Of course.
I just want to point that out. So anyway.
That was the whole point about a standing army, you know, which is what we have now, which is what they argued against. I mean, the whole point about militias is that's how this country was founded. And what they're talking about there, what's unlawful about it, right? You're allowed to, Second Amendment. Right. The idea is they're claiming that when people coordinate, it suddenly becomes illegal. And there's not even a legal argument there. Right, that they're just violating the Constitution or saying that you don't have that constitutional right. It's insulting.
Right. So she goes on to say this is no different in open carry state. She says that ability to open carry doesn't supersede the prohibitions on paramilitary, which is what she claimed, that explanation we just went over.
Well, but here's the thing with that, and this is what you have to understand, is even as the cases in the past of the Supreme Court have ruled, that if a law, even a law that's agreed upon by the government is made that's contradictory to the Constitution, it's null and void. So just because they make a rule or a law or mandate that says paramilitary this or that, it violates the idea of the militias. That's a constitutional, you know, contradiction. It's null and void, period.
So anyway, I mean, you won't, this stuff is really crazy. I just need to highlight this whole thing. I mean, you're not going to believe this stuff, especially, I mean, if you're a Second Amendment proponent, or if you're not, if you just support the Constitution, what they're clearly trying to do here. I mean, you can see how this can be used subjectively, the argument she's trying to make, to completely undermine open carry in states where it's legal to open carry. So it's a way to undermining laws that she and this institute at Georgetown just doesn't like, right? So that ability to open carry doesn't supersede the prohibitions on paramilitary. An individual has the right to bear arms, but is he carrying his weapon in a way that could be intimidating to voters? Oftentimes, intimidation is not defined by the statute, but those that exist establish brandishing or displaying a weapon in a way that could be viewed as intimidating to be unlawful. Determining whether someone is a lone actor or working in connection with a larger group requires evidence, and it might exist in social media or pre-planning conversations. So even if only one person showed up in an open carry state with a weapon that is, you know, open carry, they're following the laws laid out in that open carry law. If only one person, you know, they're not with a group and they happen to be doing open carry. Okay, if there is evidence he is part of an organized force based on social media, okay, he'd still be potentially in violation of the law.
This is exactly what we were just talking about the Q thing, about everything else, where they're not tech. I mean, look, think about YouTube with borderline content. It's everywhere. You're not technically breaking the rules, but because we imply we think that you're connected to this or that they're just jumping up. The law is not their guide. It never has been. And this is just making it very obvious. They're assuming. That's the word for it.
I mean, this is really crazy stuff. So basically, they're saying, what she's saying too, is that in this argument, I think I have some more on this in a second. What these people argue at ICAP is that militia in the Constitution, all of this stuff actually refers to the National Guard, which she calls our state-sponsored militias. So basically, you can only form a militia if you are sponsored or supported or approved by the state. You can't make your own militia. And that's, entirely in contrast, completely contradictory to the original intent of that.
I would argue it's hard to argue the intent of anything. We have our opinions, but it's what it says, right? You don't get to add in words and context of today versus now. I mean, they act like it's archaic, that, oh, it was a different time today versus then. But it's the same concept. It doesn't change. You don't just get to add things in. We have those rights. They can't take them away. It's the same thing they're doing with the Second Amendment. Oh, well, it's a different time, and it's for hunting. And it clearly doesn't say that. And it literally says, in regard to the militia, in the Second Amendment. Right? These people are trying to rewrite history in real time.
Right. And I just want to point out, though they frame this claim as being targeted exclusively at right-wing, white supremacist, white nationalist militias, if you look at this article, again, this will all be in the show notes, they also talk about left-wing militias or militias that are predominantly African-Americans, okay? And they're saying, like, all of this has to go away, only state-sponsored, state-approved armed groups, only the state can hold weapons and can open carry weapons and all of this stuff. I mean, this is just... Given what we pointed out earlier with the Transition Integrity Project and this push to federalize police and high-tech policing and all of this stuff under the guise of reform, I mean, this is really dangerous, the fact that they're arguing that, both people on the left and the right have no right to use guns or carry guns to defend themselves. Give it to the police, that's going to solve police brutality. I mean, I don't know.
It's just when you consider the real reason for why that was written. And it is absolutely about tyrannical government and defending your rights. That's why that is there. It's stated. And that's what they're taking away with this. Say, oh, no, it's only the government that can appoint those things, which contradicts the whole point of why that's there.
Right. So here it is. McCord and ICAP sent a letter to the mayor of Louisville, Kentucky, offering free legal assistance to help the city regulate private paramilitary activity while preserving constitutional rights, they say, even though they're specifically undermining constitutional rights. And here she says, we're doing it whether it's right-wing activity or left-wing activity. So keep that in mind here. You're not allowed, only the state can have the weapons. You cannot, left or right, it doesn't matter. So this isn't just a right-wing, left-wing issue here. I find it honestly pretty disconcerting, given that these same people are also involved in an effort to ram through the federalization of police, which would just be so bad for American civil liberties. I mean, you think police brutality is bad now. Just wait till they federalize and that would make all police people like working for DHS, essentially, is what that would mean. And
it'd be the military.
But if you're on the left, think about how DHS, manages ICE and how they treat people that ICE rounds up. I mean, do you want those guys being the only cops around, and then you have to go complain to DHS about police brutality? You think they're going to care? I mean, come on. They are setting this up to screw over people on the left and the right. So if you're getting triggered by the militia talk because, you don't like right-wing militias or whatever, this is targeting people on the left and the right just the same. We need to keep that in mind. This is the people behind this, just like the TIP, right? They're bipartisan. They're coming together to screw over the 99% or whatever. We need to keep all of that in mind while we're talking about this.
One thing I want to add real quickly too is, remember, this is just your point about people that may not like this discussion. Remember that there's nothing inherently illegal about what's happening, and that the implication is that because these people are there, that they're going to then use that force, right? That's an argument you could make about any group or any activity. The point is that they're there within their rights. And because we want to add things hypothetically about what we think they'll accomplish, accomplish, right? That's nobody's right, right? And that's important to think about. They're not violating laws or anybody's rights, and that's what it comes down to.
So here she is now talking about the Second Amendment. There's a notion or a mythology out there about the Second Amendment, particularly in open carry states, that means you can carry a weapon anytime for whatever purpose in any way, including as part of as a militia. And that's not what the Supreme Court said. And so apparently there was this 2008 Supreme Court decision, which again is relatively recent. You have to keep in mind what the militia thing in the Constitution was originally about and what the Second Amendment was originally about, a tyrannical government, anyway. She said, here it says that majority opinion reads the Second Amendment is not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever in any manner whatsoever and for whatever purpose. But she's reading into that a lot because the argument she makes previously is that you can't have any weapons without permission from the governor. Huh. Okay, so I mean, that's a little different. And then here she is again, it's not left-wing or right-wing thing to be armed. She says it's a symbol of breakdown of civil society, which is being gamed out by all these same people, right? So, I mean, it's just really crazy to see what this group is doing.
I recommend people look into Marbury versus Madison, which is the point I made earlier. I just want to make sure I said it correctly because that's the concept that anything that's null and void to the Constitution is, or anything that contradicts the Constitution, or the term they use is repugnant to the Constitution, is null and void. So those laws she just pointed out, just, you know, doesn't 2008 or otherwise, it challenges the Constitution. It's null and void.
Right. So this is an article specifically about Washington State, which I think, you know, we're going to be talking mostly about Philadelphia today, but Washington State appears to be another flashpoint, just like it was earlier in the summer with Seattle in particular. And it's worth pointing out the person that's in charge of the Seattle office at the FBI used to be head of the Joint Terrorism Task Force at the FBI, the same group that was warning about the new 9/11 back in March. We're on the doorstep of another 9/11, right? So he used to be head of that, which was also at the time involved in entrapping Muslim Americans and numerous quote unquote fake terror plots. We've talked about this in previous videos. It's worth pointing out too that federal, state, and local officials have been participating in tabletop exercises about post-election violence and mayhem, right? So I'm assuming they're referring to the TIP here, but given the emphasis on state and local officials, it suggests that these type of tabletop exercises like the TIP did have been going on to a large extent throughout the country. So that's something to be a little concerned about. And anyway, the FBI guy that's now in charge of Seattle stuff is talking about that, you know, malignant foreign influences are going to use social media to flare up both sides, Iran, China, and Russia. So just how this narrative's in here. And here we have Mary McCord again of IPAC talking about all states have laws that could be enforced to stop far right militias or armed vigilantes from self-activating. But as she points out, it's also left-wing groups. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, they've been putting out state-by-state fact sheets, identifying applicable laws and other resources to help state, local and state elected officials, police chiefs, and prosecutors. And in Washington, oh, that's about Washington specifically, but she has been advising various places to activate the National Guard for potential civil disturbances that will be in place. In a lot of cases, they said those National Guard deployments will be in place even after the election ends. So that's something to keep in mind there. But, you know, the fact that this group is taking these legal channels, I mean, they're lobbying. We'll see in a moment, Philadelphia is one of the cities they're lobbying, or they successfully lobbied. And so they're saying, we're going to offer you our help and we're going to help you prevent chaos on election day. But they're tied up to the same network of national security officials from the Obama administration that we've been pointing out in multiple videos are tied not just to Silicon Valley who are meddling in elections, but have been gaming this stuff out through the Transition Integrity Project and other entities, how to create the very chaos they're claiming to prevent. Just like the TIP, they say we're here to prevent chaos in the event, that Trump won't leave office. But if you look at their own war games, they're planning out how to create chaos no matter what happens. And you have ACOP on the ground going to cities and states, lobbying governors, mainly Democratic governors are the ones that have taken the bait, or Democratic mayors, probably because of the Obama era Democrat DNC ties, we can assume, right? Are essentially, they're setting up the scenario, the very scenario for chaos that the TIP was gaming out. And now this group ICAP is essentially going on the ground throughout the country and setting up the foundation to make that a reality while also gravely undermining constitutional rights of Americans and framing it again. And most of this, they're framing it as right-wing militias. But if you actually look at what she's saying, it's about left-wing and right-wing. It's about undermining the Second Amendment, period, for groups, across the board, which should alarm us, considering the push of other people at the Transition Integrity Project pushing for a federalized police force on the DNC side and also the Republican side. And, you know, it's this bipartisan deception, right? George Carlin, the American comedian, is very famous for saying something along the lines of, when you hear bipartisan, it means a larger than normal deception is taking place. And I think that's very accurate, given what we're seeing here.
Yeah, I just can't get over how ridiculous it is for them to claim that the whole thing is about what happens if Trump doesn't leave. And then they actually state in there that they're setting up ways for themselves to do the exact same thing. Like they just have no sense of themselves or they just don't care. I think it's absolutely incredible. Right. Now, did you want to jump into some of the Ground Zero discussion going into?
Yeah. So there's some articles linking the Philadelphia stuff to the stuff we were just talking about. So I'm going to go into that first, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. this happened again. All right. Well, I guess I'm not sharing the screen anymore. What I had up was an election by a report by The Atlantic that was about dueling electors that was talked about by the Transition Integrity Project. And the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic, David Frum, is a member of the Transition Integrity Project. So it's really no coincidence to see that seated. And if you look at this article from October 23rd, pretty recently, about Pennsylvania and Philadelphia in particular, they talk again about the dueling elector thing. And how it's inevitable and all of this stuff. This was written not that long ago, very close to the election. That's, on Tuesday. And so the title of this article, which was in Reuters, why the Pennsylvania vote count might throw the U.S. into a political crisis. So here they point out in Philadelphia, it's the birthplace of American democracy. What happens in Philadelphia could plunge the nation into a historic political crisis, just the political crisis they've been gaming out for more than 2 years.
What's the date on this article?
October 23rd.
Right. So just so you could see the evolution of the story. Now we're, every single month from a year back and now, right up until today is the point.
So talking about ICAP, there's a lot of material in this article, but I'm just going to focus on this part first, and I'm going to come back to the same article in a little bit when we get into a lot of the Ground Zero talk about Philadelphia. So President Trump, during one of the recent debates, the last debate, I guess it was, said bad things happen in Philadelphia was his quote. Okay. So according to Reuters, such comments prompted Philadelphia's district attorney, Larry Krasner, a Democrat, to study the laws governing militias. That sounds like something ICAP has been doing now. Mm-hmm. And he says, in case gun-toting extremists show up at the polls to intimidate voters, if that happens, we've got a jail cell for you.
You know what I mean? Note how they're just framing anybody that comes along in that regard as a gun-toting extremist. That's very, very lazy writing, but that's the whole agenda, to make anybody like that seem bad. And as you pointed out, the Second Amendment in its entirety, apparently, as well.
Right. So here's an article saying Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner announces election task force to counter voter suppression and unlawful militias at polling places. Why he says Larry Krasner, this district attorney, says it was Trump's statement, right, that prompted him to do all the stuff about militias. Well, this is October 9th, so he clearly was doing this in advance.
Not a lie. Big surprise. The point is they're gaming these things out well before that, and they just jumped on the excuse, as always.
Okay, so a task force announced here this week will be responsible for fighting against voter suppression efforts ahead of the November 3rd general election, according to District Attorney Larry Krasner. The District Attorney's Office Election Task Force will be activated from this week. It was activated in the beginning of October, okay, through Election Day in response to the historic and unprecedented nature of the 2020 election. And he says his reasons for saying this is stuff like Trump repeatedly lies about Philadelphia because he knows here it's the cradle of liberty, talking about Philadelphia. Okay, and then let's see. Then he's down here talking about stuff about gun laws in Pennsylvania. And what do you know? Who pops up here? Mary McCord of Georgetown's ICAP, also speaking alongside Larry Krasner to explain what this task force is all about. Okay, so very clearly, Larry Krasner took the ICAP bait and invited them and their coalition of law firms and the ADL into their city to game out how to prevent voter intimidation, and then later claims it's because Trump said bad things happen in Philadelphia when actually this was set up well in advance. And I mean, that's just so crazy to see these people pop up here in Philadelphia, because I found out about ICAP and this group, you know, after I already had figured out that they were going to try and really make things really crazy for the people living in Philadelphia. So
I think those kind of small lies like we're seeing here are much more important than people give credit. Like it's a small deception to say, oh, you know, it's Trump's fault that we did this, but it just shows you an under level of dishonesty that's always there. Like they'll lie about anything as long as they can batter Trump with it, you know, and it's very right. apparent.
But pay attention to what McCord from ICAP says here, because we've seen, this is how they're justifying their involvement with Larry Krasner in Philadelphia and this task force, okay? Because we've seen unlawful, heavily armed militia organizations usurping law enforcement authority by purporting to protect property during peaceful demonstrations. And then she goes on to say that's why we need a task force like this, okay? But it's worth pointing out, over the course of this past week, right, there was looting and riots in Philadelphia, and the Philadelphia Police Department, I mean, you can go and look this up, they were ordered to stand down and not protect property. So if you are a store owner and you want to protect your store with a gun and you're legally allowed to carry a firearm, this lady is saying, no, you can't do that. Okay, so just keep that in mind. You're not allowed to protect your own property based on what they're setting up.
For the record, here's that tweet that she was just talking about being tweeted out in regard to from Philadelphia, from Fox News. You know, just so it's definitely, they're straight up telling us that they were told not to arrest them. That is really crazy to think about.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, they're just basically, you know, why would you frame this the way she's framing it? I would argue it's because, you know, as we've been showing throughout this video series, what they want is chaos. I mean, they really want to inflame people on the left and the right. It's worth pointing out, too, you can go and look this up as well. A lot of the businesses that were looted in Philadelphia this week were owned by African Americans, okay? And so because they frame this, as I showed earlier, you know, targeting African-American majority militias and quote unquote left wing groups. All right. Those groups cannot also protect their property from looters or whatever, you know. So what if the protests are right wing people going after left wing businesses? The way this lady is setting it up, you can't do anything with a firearm to protect yourself unless you're approved of by the state. And this is coming from the same people who have actively been gaming out how to create as much chaos as possible in the United States between Election Day and Inauguration Day. And they are just setting this up to be as chaotic as possible. And it's just really disconcerting, given the extreme involvement of groups like ICAP and the Transition Integrity Project of the national security state. People that used to be heads of DHS or intelligence agencies and all of this stuff are the people responsible for this. It's bipartisan national security state people coming together to create chaos, do a controlled demolition of the election system, essentially, and also the Second Amendment at the same time, really, in order to impose maximum order. And what do they want? Well, I already told you, it's a national federalized police force and, you know, essentially martial law that they want to come in and impose on people, because if you create maximum chaos, what is the government's solution? It's going to be the imposition of maximum order, right? And that's what this all is about at the end of the day. Like we were saying earlier, Americans are already questioning the system. They hate the establishment Republicans and the establishment Democrats. So those people have come together to now force us by creating this chaotic situation into a new system of government where you don't have a choice. So the illusion of democracy, they're creating a huge situation to, you know, take it down.
To create the justification for why they can do so and blame something other than their desire to do so, right? That's like right. What COVID is doing as well.
So I want to show you now what this task force involves, because it's not just ICAP, okay? and the district attorney's office in Philadelphia, you might be surprised who's involved, or maybe not if you've been watching our video series. So here it says, a multi-agency task force comprised of emergency responders from both the state and federal level is organized to respond to any unrest surrounding the historic and tumultuous 2020 election in Pennsylvania, officials said on Thursday afternoon. This is from October 29th, so this is pretty recent. But they're talking about the same task force I just showed you that has been active, was activated in Pennsylvania since the beginning of October, okay? That task force is made up of Pennsylvania's Emergency Management Agency, which is overseen by DHS's FEMA, by the way, Pennsylvania State Police, the National Guard, DHS, U.S. Homeland Security, the FBI, and an unspecified cybersecurity team are the task force in Philadelphia right now. Given what we talked about cybersecurity in the first two videos, including efforts by companies like Darktrace, deeply tied to the CIA and UK intelligence, or Cyber Reason, or Tenable, all of these really shady companies that had ties to the software side of 9/11, lobbying in Philadelphia all over the course of this year to get their software installed on Philadelphia systems. Go back and watch videos one and two.
Right.
They're not saying cybersecurity team is. Why aren't they saying who it's composed of?
Exactly. There's no reason you would, any company without some kind of intention they don't want you knowing about would want themselves to be acknowledged in this, because it's any, for business reasons, it makes all the sense in the world. It only makes sense to not list it when you're doing something secret.
Right. And so here it says this multi-agency task force that's specific to Philadelphia involves DHS. It's multi-agency. It involves remember, DHS gamed out chaos for Cyber Reason. Multiple DHS heads like Michael Chertoff, we've talked about in previous videos, and he's part of the Transition Integrity Project, okay, that was gaming this stuff out. So don't think he doesn't have influence there anymore, okay? And then the most recent confirmed head of DHS that isn't an acting secretary, Christian Nielsen, also on the board of Carbon 911 that we talked about in video number one, alongside Michael Chertoff. I mean, the DHS ties to all this network that we've been talking about in these series should be pretty obvious. So they're working directly with local law enforcement, Philadelphia Police Department. Okay, so DHS, DHS and the FBI, the people that have been warning about the doorstep of another 9/11 are here, focused on Philadelphia. And Philadelphia, as we pointed out, very similar to the very city that was the fictional city in the Cyber Reason simulations, that is a medium to large size city in a swing state that is the key to the presidential election. And that is how Philadelphia has been framed multiple times by mainstream media over the past several months. Just unbelievable. So anyway, this is a separate report talking about the National Guard and the military at the national level. And so what they're saying about the military role in U.S. elections, National Guard soldiers around the nation will take part in security operations for the election, but only for cybersecurity. But what else do they say? Guard soldiers will come to the aids of states as poll workers dressed in civilian clothes and performing the usual duties, setting up tables and handing out ballots. The coronavirus has led to a need for more poll workers. So basically COVID-19 is being used as an excuse because they're saying the poll workers tend to be older and more at risk of being COVID-19. The traditional poll workers need to stay at home because they could get infected with coronavirus. They're a high risk group. So now we have to have the National Guard come in disguised in civilian clothing as the poll workers. But check this out. If violence erupts and the local police are unable to handle it, a governor could activate guard units. But what if those guard units activated are the ones in civilian clothing at polling stations?
Exactly.
They don't really specify that, do they? And given all the other stuff.
It's designed to create the chaos between the poll watchers and these people that they wouldn't recognize as authority figures trying to tell them what to do. And it's an obvious painted reality. We could see this is plainly going in a very clear direction.
Well, let's go back to this Reuters article for a second, because it talks about this partisan ground war. Remember, you were showing this being seeded, that same term, I think, actually, you showed in that article from February in national media, a partisan ground war in swing states. Here it is again. I'm going to skip over that part. But basically, they're having these dueling. Biden campaign is sending the biggest ever, quote unquote, voter protection team to counter the Republican efforts, because Trump is... plans to send thousands of volunteers across Pennsylvania, specifically to Philadelphia, to monitor voting locations, and then you have the Biden campaign doing the same, all descending on Philadelphia, and then you have the National Guard disguised in civilian clothing. They can be activated at any time to do unrest or stuff, or respond to unrest or whatever if the governor calls upon them. Okay, I mean, they are arming, excuse my swear word, the biggest clusterfuck you could imagine in Philadelphia right now. And just wait until what you see Philadelphia has been, how it's been labeled by mainstream media in the past several weeks. I mean, it's just out of control.
Family friendly show here, Whitney, family friendly.
The
idea is, you know, these things, to almost to what you said, which people may think it was like, I think that the idea that they could be activated to create the chaos is absolutely something we should be considering. Not just that they could be activated to stop other chaos and then that causes more chaos, but like, our government has a very clear track record of creating false flags and all kinds of things. That's not a secret. So it's not dumb or even illogical or conspiracy theorist to ask whether or not that's possible in that moment. You know, I think it's a very reasonable question to ask.
Right. So here again, we have the Reuters article. Remember, this is really recent, talking about Philadelphia in particular. I'm talking about how some academics, they're talking about the TIP here, but they refer to them as academics, okay? They've outlined a scenario in which Trump, using fraud as the justification, calls on Republican-held legislators in battleground states to appoint their own electors to compete with the electors typically certified by governors. The TIP game this out, but in the opposite direction. Right, but here it says, Pennsylvania and three other battleground states, Michigan, Wisconsin, and North Carolina, which were the ones on the TIP exercise that did the dueling electors thing, all have Democratic governors and Republican-controlled legislators, raising the possibility of dueling slates of electors being submitted to Congress. This is straight out of the TIP playbook, and it's being seeded here as essentially likely, if not inevitable, to take place not just in Pennsylvania, but these three other states, okay? Pretty crazy to see that here. And then it's talking about how dueling electors created a crisis in an election a very long time ago. And then here is two senior Trump campaign officials said the campaign had discussed getting Republican state legislators to submit electors, but only in a last resort scenario that could likely be avoided. And as we know, the TIP, they'll have the DNC do the same because they gamed it out and it was John Podesta, Donna Brazile, and all these DNC officials, you know, people with deep connections to the DNC. But what this shows here is that it's equally likely that either side will do it. You know, we have both parties here complicit in this effort to manufacture and create chaos. Okay, so just want to point that out here. And then here's another thing straight out of the TIP scenario we already covered. The House alone would pick the president in another scenario, and the Senate would choose the vice president. And then electoral votes being challenged and excluded by Congress. And then talking about Bush-Gore again, how all these people that were involved in the Bush-Gore recount Supreme Court case, you have a retired Supreme Court justice who presided over that particular case in Florida, wrote to friends in September warning that the 2020 election posed a grave risk to American democracy, just more of the seeding that, you know, the election system is fragile and near collapse. And here it's talking about how all these imminent lawsuits are set to be filed immediately after Philadelphia, just like Bush-Gore, framing it as a sort of Bush-Gore repeat. And, you know, you have the TIP people in here. Sorry, this article is pretty long, so I'm just scrolling down to see. Oh, well, this is more of the seeding using the sort of like explosive related buzzwords around Philadelphia. We'll see more of that later. But at the end of here, it calls it a powder keg. I predict a mess. So they're sort of setting up this inevitability. So now really quick, before we get into all of that. Oh, sorry. This is another one on the National Guard thing. I guess I missed. But I think I already, I already covered it really. Oh yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, ICAP, right, has been going around recommending that they activate the National Guard ahead of the election, which is what Philadelphia did this week. Okay. The mayor's office said the city requested the Pennsylvania Guard help with the current situation, election preparation. They, before this decision, were already working with ICAP, and ICAP has been recommending this, referring to the National Guard as the state-sponsored militia that can help with public safety ahead of perceived paramilitary threats or whatever on the day of the election. So, just wanted to go over that. So is there anything, I think you had something, Ryan, that was related to this, if I'm not mistaken. So before I move on, Why don't you bring that up?
I thought we were going to end with the National Guard, but it'll work either way. That so, you know, essentially, first of all, in regard going back to the Ground Zero thing, just to kind of show you the examples of this.
Well, you can bring it up later, because I just wanted to show the guy that heads up the Office of Emergency Management in Philadelphia, and then I was going to move straight to the Ground Zero stuff, the media.
Go right ahead.
Okay, so I'll, sorry about that. I'll go back to my screen then. So, it's important to point out the Office of Emergency Management is going to be intimately involved in whatever sort of stuff takes place in Philadelphia, unrest, including police response, any sort of first responder response. And this is important too, when you consider this other narrative they've seeded that we've talked about in previous videos in our election special about how there's going to be 911 call center issues. Right. So this Office of Emergency Management also oversees that whole first responder network. So it's important to look at the guy who's in charge of emergency management right now in Philadelphia. And he was actually put in place relatively recently by the same people who brought you the Pennsylvania Election Task Force set up with ICAP, Georgetown's ICAP. Okay. So Adam Thiel is the director of the Office of Emergency Management. Before he was put here relatively recently. He was fire commissioner in 2016. But before then, he was deputy secretary of Homeland Security for the state of Virginia. So they moved him from Virginia, where he was head of basically the DHS at the state level for Virginia, to Philadelphia, where he was fire commissioner. But he only became head of Office of Emergency Management, here it is, in April of 2019. So pretty recently. And this guy, I mean, I just could not believe how blatant this guy is based on a lot of stuff we've been talking about. I mean, honestly, I was very shocked. I don't often do this. I yelled at my computer. I was like, no way, because I just couldn't believe it. So let me load his LinkedIn. I think that's enough, right? So this guy used to work for Answer. We have talked about them on the show several times. They did Dark Winter, the bioterror simulation. They also, at the time that was going on, were led by the former deputy director for science and technology at the CIA. Before 9/11, they set up what would, right after 9/11, become DHS's first think tank that DHS, in official statements, claimed was set up after they were created, but actually was set up in 1999 and then activated in April 2001, which was involved with what were the half of the author team of the Dark Winter bioterror simulation. If you're not familiar with my work on Dark Winter, I recommend you go read it, because the people that participated in Answer's Dark Winter simulation about bioterror had foreknowledge of the anthrax attacks and were involved in trying to blame Iraq and Al-Qaeda for the anthrax attack, even after it was revealed that the anthrax using the attacks was a U.S. military source. And they're just an extremely shady group. And it's worth pointing out that while Adam Thiel, this guy who's now the director of emergency management for Philadelphia, while he was at Answer and they were doing programs here, it says it for the DHS Science Technology Directorate, that directorate at DHS was headed by Tara O'Toole, who wrote the Dark Winter exercise and now works for the CIA directly. Okay, so not only did he work for Answer, oh, it's also worth pointing out, going back here, this guy responded to 9/11, to the Pentagon plane, whatever you want to call it, hitting the Pentagon, hitting the accounting office, and not where the actual leadership of the Pentagon was. They were trying to find the trillions of dollars that were announced missing on September 10th. Yeah, so anyway.
It's quite a history he's got there. There's a lot of ties that they're standing out, even just things you've mentioned that you're not even getting. I mean, it's just incredible to see how these people's backgrounds are tied with all of the nefarious activities. I mean, the 9/11 aspect is obviously the one that needs to stand out in people's minds right now because of everything she showed you in her research and all the same people. And it really, what we said in the past couple shows, which we haven't really said today, is that it really does seem like an extension of the same agenda from 9/11, even before, into what we're dealing with now. And that's why it's very relevant that the same people seem to be both driving it and benefiting from what's happening right now.
Right. So this guy, look, he used to be involved with that same task force we've been talking about a lot at the FBI, the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force, also DHS Threat Task Force, And he, here it is, a principal investigator for a DHS-funded regional resilience dashboard project. And at when he was deputy secretary for public safety and homeland security in Virginia, he was, you know, in that capacity, the top advisor to the governor of Virginia about homeland security. It's worth pointing out that this is, I would argue, in terms of being a secretary for homeland security in a particular state, being in either Virginia or Maryland, I think would be very relevant because that, of course, overlaps with Washington, D.C. to an extent. And of course, the CIA's headquarters and a lot of the national security state in general are located in the state of Virginia, right? So, or their headquarters are officially if they're not in Washington, D.C. itself. But probably the craziest thing about this guy, Adam Thiel, we're going to look at now. So beyond the DHS answer stuff and how involved DHS has been with simulating chaos for years now in the 2020 election, and them saying in March that we're on a doorstep of another 9/11 and we just can't stop it, right? Check out how this guy, Adam Thiel, who they frame as just a regular old fire commissioner and director of Office of Emergency Management guy now, I guess, he is on this council of executives at the Center for Cyber and Homeland Security, rubbing shoulders with people that are very high level national security state operatives, including some that we've been talking about a lot recently, including, what do you know, Michael Chertoff is here, former secretary of DHS, a co-founder of the Chertoff Group, which, by the way, employs numerous former high-ranking CIA officials. Executive director of IBM, Center for Business of Government, the head of the chief information officer at the CIA right now from IBM Federal. We've talked about IBM intelligence ties a lot recently. Former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, former director of the Counterterrorism Center at the CIA. These are not low-ranking people. These are big-name guys in the national security state. Okay, I really want to stress that to people. Former president and CEO of the MITRE Corporation, who we've talked about a lot, and one of the biggest and shadiest think tanks and research and development centers for the U.S. government, also with ties to the software angle of 9/11, as we talked about in video two. Former coordinator for the Center for Strategic Counterism Communications, Counterterror Propaganda at the U.S. State Department. I can't believe this guy's here. So Ed Meese, Attorney General under Reagan, responsible for some of the biggest or directly involved in some of the Reagan administration's biggest scandals and also intimately involved in the Reagan era updates to continuity of government, which is a roadmap for martial law in the United States, very relevant to what's going on right now. A former Assistant Secretary for Homeland Defense at the Pentagon, former vice president or current vice president, sorry, for Northrop Grumman, one of the biggest weapons manufacturers in the U.S., former administrator or former head of FEMA. Tom Ridge, another former secretary of DHS, very tied up with Robert Kadlec, by the way, since we were talking about dark winter type stuff. He used to be governor of Pennsylvania, still has a lot of influence in Pennsylvania, by the way. And then, you know, among all of these big name guys, we just have the fire commissioner, Adam Thiel. What is a little fire commissioner doing here with people like Tom Ridge and Michael Chertoff and Ed Meese? I just find that so odd that you have all these like really high ranking national security guys, former director of Central Intelligence, former director of the FBI. Right. I mean, these are like some big name people, director of technology for Raytheon. And then I'm supposed to believe that like this fire commissioner guy isn't here from like some sort of reason. I mean, he's obviously has the same sort of ideology as a lot of these big name people here. Otherwise, I don't think he would have been handpicked for that position. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think it's a little weird personally. And his relatively recent appointment to be in the Office of Emergency Management at a time when we're seeing all these narratives seeded about Philadelphia and the city he's managing in particular. I mean, it's freaky, honestly.
I have a sneaking suspicion that his relevance on that board is going to be more relevant in so many days down the future here.
Yeah, that's possible. So sorry, my screen's a little messed up here. but I just want to, this is, we're going to be going through some of the buzzwords here. So I'm just going to, what they've been saying about Philadelphia, even before this past week, which has been very chaotic in Philadelphia, what the media, how the media has been framing Philadelphia, the words they've been using, both at local news for Philadelphia, which, by the way, local news stations throughout the country controlled by national corporations. So they're not like locally owned. I want to stress that in case people forget. So I'll come back to this Reuters article again, but so this is from early October, the day right when that task force in Philadelphia was activated, right, with ICAP and the district attorney of Philadelphia. CNN says, Pennsylvania becomes, in early October, Pennsylvania becomes epicenter of 2020 election chaos. A month before the election, it's already become the epicenter, they say.
And the first sentence there that drives me, that makes me frustrated, has become the epicenter of something that hasn't happened yet. Was warned was coming. How can you be the epicenter of something that's coming? God, that's frustrating.
Well, because they're framing this and they're telling you this is how it's going to be.
Obviously, I get why. I'm just saying it's just for everybody to make fun of CNN for basically choosing the narrative over their journalistic, their writing ability. Like, they're like, that's okay. The narrative is more important than making sure we show people that we know how to write properly. It's incredible.
Right. But remember all the, you know, we were showing these media reports. Remember the past year, they keep talking about election chaos. Chaos is the word here, the operative word. Also in all of these intelligence link simulations with cyberies and other organizations, chaos is the key word for all of that stuff across the board. So it's very important that they are saying Pennsylvania has become, they're announcing it, okay, the epicenter of the 2020 election chaos that experts warned was coming. I would argue that they had been manufacturing, mm-hmm. As we've been talking about over the course of this video series. I'm talking about, you know, emphasis on militant language, how they're militarizing things. Just really crazy stuff. Disinformation is going to get worse. It's going to be bad on election day. There will be doctored images of results. The deep fakes we were talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Likely to happen here. The FBI has already warned about the growing threat of disinformation from foreign powers. I mean, they're telling you what's going to go down in Philadelphia already. So, I mean, time to pay attention. And that's all I really highlighted here because I was focusing on some other stuff anyway. Pennsylvania risks becoming a center of election chaos. This is a couple days before the CNN article. So I guess they risked becoming the epicenter and then they become the epicenter a few days later. anyway, I just want people to pay attention to the choice of words here because they repeat throughout outlets on the national and local scale. Okay. Epicenter for election disputes in 2020. And they use a lot of militant words to describe what they're framing in all of these articles are litigation, legal battles, or disputes over vote counting. But they're using a lot of military-style language and epicenter, bullseye, target, ground zero is probably the most alarming out of all of them. And then, so anyway, epicenter, talking about aggressive legal and political fights. And of course we have this partisan ground war. So I would argue that's a lot of the reason for this military sounding language that they have been throwing into a lot of these reports. It has the potential to be total chaos, says a Philadelphia-based consultant who was Hillary Clinton's communications director in Pennsylvania. I mean, basically saying, yeah, it's going to be chaotic. It's not like the other people that ran Hillary Clinton's campaign were gaming how to create chaos in my state with the TIP, just wild. but, you know, let's see. Democrats are eyeing Pennsylvania with particular urgency. Okay. The same Democrats, the DNC, involved with the TIP and all of this stuff. I mean, just got to hammer that home. I mean, it's very alarming. The most heavily litigated in history, Georgetown's ICAP is set up to do all of that. And then here it is. They're saying again, Florida in 2000, Bush versus Gore, the same people behind that. Here they are with ICAP. You know, electoral chaos in Pennsylvania, all about ballots. And I think they have a ground zero mention in here, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, I guess not. see, on to the next one. Pennsylvania could be the Florida of 2020. Once again. So calling it the Florida of 2020, they're talking about court battles. Okay. But here they're saying Pennsylvania becomes ground zero in determining the outcome of the presidential election. Going to see a lot of mentions about ground zero in particular. And here is the center of the bullseye. This is another term that comes up a lot. Either the bullseye has moved over Pennsylvania or Pennsylvania is in the center of the bullseye, you know, in the middle of the target, the epicenter, right? I mean, a lot of these things are sort of related in terms of what they end up seeding and meaning to people who are reading these, which is why I'm pointing it out. Girded for battle. This is also a term that pops up in the Reuters article. Electoral chaos. I mean, they repeat a lot of the same phrases throughout articles. Pennsylvania could become ground zero for court battles on and after Election Day. This will load. Erie County in Pennsylvania, which we talked about earlier, ground zero among battleground counties. Why the emphasis on this term ground zero? Pennsylvania ground zero for election lawsuits. And this is not a ground zero one, but this one is saying it's going to be hell how Pennsylvania is on track for election chaos. They're talking about the mail ballot system and the court battles, but look at the image they chose. Pennsylvania being hit by a fiery meteor, flooding, tornadoes, lightning. Seems a little weird.
Especially when they're being symbolic with the use of ground zero, like the litigation and so on. And it's like, look at the world being destroyed. It's not actually what they're even implying, you know?
Right, right. So another thing that caught my attention here was calling it, it's a brew. There was a DHS official we talked about on the show, I think a couple days ago or maybe a week or two ago, where there was a DHS official saying, well, what's going on in this election is a witch's brew, and saying all these different things, foreign meddling, foreign hacking, domestic terrorism, partisan ground wars, all of this stuff were all converging on the day of an election. And that was the term he used. And then they use a similar term for Philadelphia, and saying this guy, I think it's going to be hell in Pennsylvania. let's see, already become an epicenter again, and an obvious place for campaigns of candidates to fight. And remember how they've set up these dueling, not only do we have the dueling electors issue, we have these dueling ground observers from the Trump and Biden campaigns on the ground that, you know, with the National Guard in civilian clothing, also at those same polling centers. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? But I mean, it's clearly a recipe for some crazy stuff that they have been setting up here. And before I go any farther, I'm just going to go back to this Reuters article that I mentioned earlier, because it had a lot of TIP stuff, but it also uses these ground zero terms in here. And that's how I actually first found this article. So here's another guy saying, it's clear the bullseye is scoping in on Philadelphia as the epicenter of the 2020 general election. So you have those same buzzwords here. It's just interesting that all these different experts and officials are all choosing to use the same terminology to describe what's going on in Philadelphia, you know, sort of like it's coordinated almost.
Historically speaking, that's usually the case, right? When you look back on things like the Iraq War, you can find examples of exactly like this. And it turns out the people that were involved with the illusion were the ones seeding this narrative into the discussion, right? It's very clear the precedent's there.
Right. So here's girding for battle. We saw that in another article from Newsweek, also referring to Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. Then there's this whole powder keg thing. here is an article. Trump is making the 2020 election a recipe for chaos, how Philadelphia is preparing October 11th. And here they're talking about how there was a planning session in Philadelphia. They did a tabletop exercise apparently during this time, right after their task force with ICAP and all of these people was made, you know, like they did a TIP style simulation here in Philadelphia. Okay. So they're talking about a scenario here. What if in-person votes suggest President Trump is winning Pennsylvania after polls close, but the slow counting of mail-in ballots flips the tally in favor of Joe Biden? What if Trump then wrongly claims the election is being stolen from him and calls on supporters to storm election offices? This is the scenario that scared people the most, said one participant in the planning session, meaning they're planning for this task force. They're planning for this scenario. And this scenario was actually gamed out by a data firm that was set up by Michael Bloomberg a couple months ago. And they call this the red mirage, this illusion that Trump wins in Pennsylvania. And then these mail-in ballots start coming in and throw it for Biden. Okay, so this is something that has been seeded and gamed out by very powerful, funded by powerful people. And seated in mainstream media well before Philadelphia, but they're essentially framing this exact scenario as taking place in the epicenter of election chaos, which they have named is Philadelphia. And so it's interesting to see too, given what we've seen with all these simulations going back years now, particularly last year, and how all of their predictions for that chaos seem to be materializing and converging around the election, right? And so we have Philadelphia with their task force involving DHS, also involved in the cyber reason simulations and all this stuff, doing their own tabletop exercise about this exact scenario. I just find that kind of, a little blatant, I guess you could say. And so here it is, they're calling it the Red Mirage, right? And there's linked to this from CNN and national media, that this is something that has been talked about by DNC people and also TIP people. People that are members of the TIP, okay, have been discussing this exact phenomenon taking place, and they did their simulations, and now Philadelphia is doing their simulations with a task force aligned and guided by ICAP of Georgetown, okay, so.
And you could argue easily from like a obviously Republican standpoint in this whole thing that this is just setting up the narrative to justify why what would appear to be an obvious, unexpected turn is already justified, because we wrote about it before it started. You know what I mean? Right. Like, you could argue that, and that would make sense.
So dozens of officials, they're talking about this tabletop exercise done sometime in October in Philadelphia. Dozens of officials talk through how to handle the specific scenario that we've been hearing for months now in mainstream media. They're saying is going to happen. Okay. And others, how to handle this stuff in the fire administration building. And guess who was involved? The Office of Emergency Management, led by Adam Thiel, who is on a council of executives with Michael Chertoff, who is one of the big guys at the Transition Integrity Project. And they're saying this meeting took place before, this is the terms used by the journalist here writing at the Philadelphia Inquirer, before Trump put Philadelphia on the front lines of his attack on voting. By declaring on TV that bad things happen in Philadelphia.
By simply saying bad things happen in Philadelphia, which, by the way, people are arguing implies political moves, right? And they're just suddenly making that an open attack on, I mean, that is ridiculous. Whatever side of the two-party the illusion that you're on, that is still ridiculous writing, which you just have to see how obviously they want people to think this way.
And remember the biggest fear that you were showing in some of those mainstream media articles from earlier this year and were also talked about last year and by cyber reason and all of this stuff. What Trump's statement, they're blaming all of this on Trump saying bad things happen in Philadelphia. It's their worst fear, right? It causes an unnecessary and even dangerous lack of confidence in our election system. It encourages people to question something that is foundational to our democracy.
But again, see, I hate when things like, when this such bad mainstream media journalism drives you to defend someone like Donald Trump or Biden for that matter. That's ridiculous, right? What he's saying there has nothing to do with the way they're trying to frame that. You know, it doesn't even imply some kind of undermining any election process. He's simply saying that, you know, in regard to Pennsylvania, or I would argue any one of these important states, there can be some pretty bad things that can happen in regard to, say, not expecting a red mirage or a blue mirage, right? I mean, it's just so gross to see these mainstream media pundits try to swing this, or fake journalists.
Right, and here they're setting up the partisan ground war stuff that ICAP is talking about and making all their fact sheets about and all this stuff. They're saying Philadelphia officials fear the greatest potential source of election day conflict is not poll watchers, but other Trump supporters who show up outside polling places. They're saying, we have to be concerned about people who could be rogue poll watchers and might come from areas of Pennsylvania with high numbers of white nationalist groups and militias.
So are they rogue because of something else or because they come from those areas, right? And who decides whether they're rogue?
Doesn't say, but what's interesting here, I'm still concerned there could be a broader effort to try and intimidate voters, most particularly voters of color in the center, in the city of Pennsylvania.
Didn't they argue that poll watchers were illegal in general? Isn't that what they were arguing?
Well, what they admit here, right, is that this army of Trump thing, that the poll watchers that they want to send to key battleground states on behalf of the Trump campaign, the Biden's doing their version too, but they're saying that the Trump site produced a video about how to, you know, with by the books instructions, adhering closely to state law on what officially sanctioned election monitors can and can't do, so that their poll watchers are going to be, you know, legitimate, is essentially what they're admitting, and then saying, well, the real concern are these rogue people, is how they're framing it. But I just really want to point out something I really think is going to happen based on emphases like this, and also what was in the Cyber Reason simulation. We played a clip from it in video one. They're talking about a right wing Cyber Reason in that simulation was talking about posing, you know, hacking to create chaos in a swing state, a fictional city in a swing state, by targeting a minority area in order to create conflict between the minority predominantly left leaning area in order to create conflict with the right wing governor of this fictional state in the Cyber Reason exercise, which is pretty similar to Pennsylvania. Here they're talking specifically about how these rogue poll watchers of these white nationalist militia groups, that we've already sort of talked about the narrative on that, right? And how they're going to show up and target voters of color. I think a lot of the most contentious stuff we're likely to see in Philadelphia is going to take place in areas that are dominated by minorities, and specifically in poll centers of minorities, and people are going to show up. Could it be National Guards and civilian clothing? I mean, we don't really know, but there's going to be some sort of effort to aggravate those divisions there, because that plays into this whole narrative these same people have been setting up this whole time of the white supremacist militias that are going to be responsible for the next 9/11. I mean, they were setting this up back in March, right?
So, and don't forget, we already pointed out that in regard to the whole Whitmer discussion, but more than that, that the FBI has admitted to having insiders in a lot of these militias. So now you've got, we pointed this out, so now you've got this issue of plain clothes National Guard and FBI people who don't even know each other are there. It's like they could be causing the whole thing from the get-go.
Right. And so you have Philadelphia's mayor, who's a Democrat and all tied up very much so with the establishment DNC side of the party, talking about the president singling out Philadelphia to create fear and danger. And then he's talking about specifically the Proud Boys and group like that, okay? Who, by the way, Proud Boys are not white supremacists because they're, they have a bunch of Latino members. I mean, that's not white supremacist, you know? I mean, it's just frustrating that they refer to them as that, because it, you know, creates an inaccurate narrative. And here's what the mayor of Philadelphia is saying about, it's pretty similar to what Larry Krasner was saying, is that if you show up to Philadelphia with a firearm, and based on what ICAP was setting up, it doesn't matter if you're with a group or you're alone, right? If you come, you know, the polls will be secure. There's a jail cell for you, is what the Philadelphia district attorney was saying. He's talking about Trump, calling him a cornered rat, the Philadelphia mayor there. I mean, just really crazy that they're talking about in here. They're talking about potential chaos. This is pretty nuts. This is the Philadelphia Inquirer saying, worries about post-election upheaval crystallized in the state of Pennsylvania after a September article in the Atlantic, which raised the prospect specifically that the Pennsylvania legislature, facing a prolonged vote count, could appoint its own Trump-friendly electors to the Electoral College, the dueling electors narrative. Mm-hmm. The editor-in-chief of the Atlantic is David Frum, part of the Transition Integrity Project, and I'm pretty sure this article itself is the one about the Transition Integrity Project. Yes, it is. This is 100%. I mean, look, they cite Rosa Brooks in here. I mean, it couldn't be more blatant. Mm-hmm. You know, co-founded the project. They're talking about Transition Integrity Project. So, I mean, the tentacles of that thing are very clearly here, as we've been pointing out. So, you know, they created their narrative for chaos and they're adapting it however they need to. And now they have Philadelphia on board, the leadership anyway, the Democratic leadership there. And probably Republican too. I mean, depends on if they're, you know, the Republicans are never Trump or neocons or not at the end of the day, I think. So here's Rolling Stone talking about more chaos. And they also use, the ground zero term. I think I highlighted it down here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ground zero for the legal battle. I mean, they just keep using this term ground zero over and over again, as we were pointing out. So here's another one. Pennsylvania's ground zero for litigation. Just a weird term to use for litigation, I feel like. Anyway, this one also talks about Trump and Biden planning visits to a county in Pennsylvania. This also says, we are at ground zero. So this one isn't about election litigation. It's just constant references to Philadelphia and Pennsylvania in general as ground zero. This one also uses the ground zero term. Oh, I have to hit the special button. Yeah. It might be Pennsylvania's electoral ground zero. just a lot of the same terms. Here's another one. Philadelphia's on the front lines. Talking about Trump's bad things in Philadelphia thing happening. Army of poll watchers. Philadelphia's ground zero for Trump's attack on voting. Ground zero for Trump's attack. I don't know. I mean, it just... Our electoral system is under attack. This is the guy, by the way, in the Reuters article who said the bullseye is over Pennsylvania. It's the epicenter. He really, you know, a lot of these buzzwords.
Right. If you want to see anybody who's actually hyping up fear and uncertainty, it's the people right here who you're looking at. Trump says bad things happen in Pennsylvania, and that translates to that they're under attack. I mean, think about how ridiculous that is.
Yeah, but they're framing this in militaristic terms. And as we've been pointing out, this whole partisan ground war narrative, they've been pushing really hard too for months and months. So this is also interesting too. So not only do we have like this mix of federal and local multi-agency task force set up by the district attorney of Philadelphia, Larry Krasner, and the Georgetown ICAP people, but we also have the Republican-controlled House of Pennsylvania creating an election integrity committee that can subpoena election officials and ballots. I mean, all the stuff they are creating in Pennsylvania is just going to create, it's insane what they're setting up. You know, chaos is right.
What just popped into my mind, and this will become more relevant, is we're seeing them float the idea now that there's a cognitive long-term effect of COVID-19. And imagine if that gets played in as a last grasping effort after the fact to say, well, that person in that position had tested positive for COVID and got better, so that might have affected their cognitive ability and so on. So that's going to play a role. Maybe not right after this, but it will. I can promise you that.
Right. So here's a representative, a Republican one, actually, of Pennsylvania's House saying that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has injected chaos into the general election in Pennsylvania, ensuring Pennsylvania and thereby the nation will not have reliable results on Election Day. Let's see. The seeds of this moment, this is surprisingly honest. The seeds of this moment were planted late last year. But the political dynamics run much deeper. Indeed, they were sort of planted last year, as we have been discussing. And here again, they talk about this blue shift, red mirage scenario, which we're very likely to see on Election Day in Pennsylvania. I mean, that's the scenario they keep repeating the most, that they've been gaming out the most and that they're most prepared for and the easiest to execute. I mean, if you honestly, though, go and you look at the rallies, the Trump rallies in Pennsylvania, they are huge. Right. If you actually go and look at like the pictures from them, I mean, they're all over social media. I mean, they're not hard to find. And then of course, Biden, nothing. I mean, I don't think he's done very many events since he sort of said he created the largest voter fraud organization in American history or something. Another one of his many gaffes, yeah. Right? And then also, Kamala Harris had a YouTube live stream with Bernie Sanders that they thought was going to attract a lot of viewers, and they had like under 3,000 people watching. For context, the Jimmy Dore show on their live streams, they usually get about 12,000 people watching. So that shows the national interest in Kamala Harris, right? So you know, it's very likely that Pennsylvania would probably go for Trump. And so they're setting up this red mirage, blue shift thing so they can game it this particular way that they've been simulating since June with the TIP in particular, and more recently in Philadelphia itself with the people we've been talking about already. So, oh, here's the witch's brew guy. Sorry, I guess I had this in the wrong place. The DHS guy saying the extremist threat around the election, a witch's brew. And that's why I thought it was interesting that Mother Jones was calling it, using that same sort of term, which seemed kind of weird to me. Sorry for having my tabs out of order. I apologize. So this is another Philadelphia Inquirer article. It's not chaos. Trump revealed a clear blueprint for crushing American democracy with a focus on crushing it in Philadelphia first, the birthplace of American democracy. It's an attack on our electoral system, an attack on our democracy. That's how they're framing this over and over again. And you know, this sounds like it was written by someone who watches way too much Rachel Maddow. If you actually go through and read it, here he's talking about QAnon and a bunch of things. But I think we have the same buzzwords pop up in here. Oh, no, not this one. I can't remember exactly, since I pulled this up like a week ago, exactly why. Here's a Democratic state representative for Philadelphia talking about democracies die slowly. This is a fatal blow to our democracy. You know, just a lot of the doomsday stuff that they're talking about, the way they're framing it in the context of the national framing and the intelligence leak simulations they've been doing are pretty alarming. And here they're talking about essentially putting Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, painting them with the same brush, even though they're drastically different organizations in terms of what they believe and what they stand for, which I think is pretty disconcerting. Here they paramilitary, remember this is the term that ICAP likes to use, calling them brown shirts, which of course has, you know, is meant to make people think of the Nazis in particular, talking about Trump giving bat signals to a violent mob and all of this stuff.
I guess tired of dog whistle, huh? This bat signal now?
Yeah, I don't know, but he's talking about, like, you know, this is just like what happens in authoritarian people, ballot security intimidation.
It's funny that it takes Donald Trump for them to point out the obvious issues with our election system. Like, yeah, authoritarian, you're damn right. It happened long before Trump, though. That's what's so frustrating.
And so some of the examples he's giving for stuff like this, I mean, this is why I really think something's going to really go down in a polling place that's in like a minority neighborhood, because the example they're framing here, this election in New Jersey, I mean, very different, but they're saying that they sent in this particular event in 1981, they dispatched a couple hundred people to mostly Black and Latino polling places, and they were harassing them. And then this is saying Team Trump is hoping that grim history can repeat. So they're definitely setting it up for some sort of event to take place at a minority polling station, which is, I think, a bit disconcerting. So
that person should be able to call themselves a journalist when they're saying Team Trump is hoping anything.
Hey, I mean, look at all the unhinged people on on cable news. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that he, you know, based on how mainstream media is today, that's how things stand. And then, of course, judicial intervention, the litigation aspect, Trump, Bush versus Gore, repeating itself on a bigger scale. We're seeing that again. Oh, look, he's talking about Putin's meddlers in St. Petersburg who made memes no one looked at. And, you know, anyway, he's saying, you know, this election season, we hold the power to stop Trump's fraudulent election and intimidation by goon squads and all this stuff. I mean, this guy is like, so much for your impartial journalism, Philadelphia Inquirer. anyway, I wanted to point out that there's other people using Ground Zero too. As I was pointing out, ICAP is active in every state, essentially, and they've been lobbying states, you know, throughout the country. I think it's very likely we'll see, though Philadelphia, they're framing as the epicenter and the biggest mess in this sense of electoral chaos, we're likely to see this pop up in cities throughout the country, particularly Seattle. I think North Carolina is also likely, Michigan, and, you know, a couple other battleground states, or states they're framing as battleground, like Georgia is now being framed as a battleground state, even though it's never really, I don't think it's ever really been referred to that before. But here we have someone at a Trump rally saying Arizona is ground zero for 2020. Here we have North Carolina ground zero for 2020. Ransomware hits election infrastructure in Georgia County. This was a pretty recent one, October 29th. They're calling it Georgia County is ground zero for what may be the first ransomware attack to hit election infrastructure this political season, from CNN. Okay, so a lot of ground zero terminology. And this is so crucial. If people are only watching this video, not our previous videos, the fact that they have been setting up all of this event for the 2020 election, framing it as the next 9/11, saying that we're on the doorstep of another 9/11, we can see it building and we can't stop it. Okay. And the fact that they're using the term ground zero, which obviously, I mean, makes you think of 9/11 so frequently around the 2020 election, should really make people pay attention, I think. And then, of course, we have another one saying Texas is ground zero for change. They're not even really talking about the election here, but they're still using ground zero, pretty regularly. I mean, I think it's a little weird. And I have one more thing to share, but I accidentally had it in another tab. All right, there we go. So I put this out on Twitter. In a different context, but it's worth pointing out the city of Philadelphia. Notice the time on here, date posted and responses due. The police department of Philadelphia, part of this task force with ICAP and DHS and the FBI counterism task force and their fake terror plots and all of this stuff, right? Put out an order after that task force was already created and PPD, the Philadelphia Police Department, was already part of it, putting out an order for explosives and grenades, accessories, and supplies, with responses due, a week before the election. And then we have this, these stories coming out in Philadelphia, potential explosives found in Philadelphia during violent riots. And it's worth pointing out too, that this year is the 35th anniversary of the bombing of a radical group called MOVE that used to be headquartered in Philadelphia, who are described as a radical back to nation group that stockpiled weapons, flaunted basic hygiene, and blared obscene political messages. I don't know. Per this account, the Philadelphia Citizen is the outlet for this. But it's worth pointing out that the bombing of that location was done. Let's see, maybe I missed it. So
here, I've got mine up if you want me to jump over there.
Here it is. So 35 years ago today, this is from earlier this year, but this year's the 35th anniversary of that bombing. The city of Philadelphia dropped a bomb on the West Philadelphia headquarters of this radical group. Okay. So it's something that has been in the minds, from what I've heard from people in Philadelphia who are, patrons or supporters or longtime readers, who have heard me, who heard my interview with Slow News Day last week before this chaos in Philadelphia became super obvious to everyone. We're saying stuff like, oh, the MOVE bombing, like we're worried about, something like this, or they've been setting up sort of a narrative like that. And, this news just this past week about the potential explosives found and all of this stuff have made people that live in Philadelphia and have been there their whole lives, at least some of the ones I've talked to, which is all I can really speak to, right, have thought, have been mentioned this bombing to me because I didn't know about it because, I'm not from here, right, or from this particular city. So,
Well, just to add to that before I move on to the other stuff, this was actually, let's see, let me get the right page up here, just an extension of that last point. This is from The Guardian. The day police bombed a city street. Can scars of 1985 MOVE atrocity be healed? MOVE being the group. The point I wanted to make here is that even the person, the guy, part of the bomb squad, disposal squad, he's quoted here as saying, wow, you want me to do that? And, it says 11 people, including 5 children, died in a Philadelphia neighborhood burned down in the airstrike against a Black liberation group. Now an effort to reconciliation is underway. Now, the point is, I want us to consider the idea of order takers today and the classic. I mean, they're even using the term brown shirts and things like this. There's been precedent set that, you know, you need to resist unjust laws or orders. And in a situation like this, realize that it's not the government or the police office that ends up living with this action. It's the guy who they ordered to do that, who killed children and was just simply doing his job. So think about that as it applies today with whether it's COVID-19 or the election or National Guard, that people are being given orders that are fundamentally at their core unconstitutional. And we need to realize that you have the right, and society hopefully would defend you to say no to such an order, knowing that it violates the core thing that you're taking an oath to. So I just want that to be thought of, because that's really horrifying. And to Whitney's point, the precedent where your government is actually the one that in the past has executed the bombing. And I think it's really crazy. I mean, next level ridiculous to see any local government buying explosives in such a way. I mean, you could point out that Trump's, even Obama's before that, but policies have allowed this like expedited process of military equipment flowing into the arms of police, where they have grenade launchers and so on, but explosives in such a way, it just doesn't really make any sense. And I thought it was an interesting point that you mentioned there, that they were supposed to respond before October 27th. So for people that are, you know, saying ridiculous things about this, that suddenly, you know, I think it's a valid point.
Well, to me, especially given how they've been framing Philadelphia.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Given how they've been framing Philadelphia before that contract, that bid for contracts was put out, framing it as ground zero, epicenter, all of this stuff, and sort of seeding this narrative that some white nationalist group is going to target a polling center in a minority community, as we were seeing earlier. And then the precedent of that MOVE bombing, I mean, it just seems a little unfortunate to me. You know, obviously because of the social media censorship they've already announced is going to take place to an extreme degree on Facebook and Twitter. You know, I'm not trying to say I know what's going to happen, but, you know, we need to be aware of this information in the event something does take place. There is an obvious motive to blame a particular group for that and have that narrative cemented right away. Given the stuff we've been talking about today, it'll you know, that stuff is worth consideration if we do see some sort of explosive event take place,
right,
around election day.
Mm-hmm. I just have to be honest that I'm so tired of feeling like we have to reel and defend ourselves about logical questions and pointing out connections because of the lazy arguments of people in the mainstream media that just want to lob conspiracy theorists at anything that they don't think fits into their narrative. Like, I think we can all collectively agree that we're all tired of that BS for mainstream media, you know, other than people that are just blindly listening to what they have to say. But epicenter, ground zero, obviously epicenter ties back to the concept of the biological effect aspect that I think is going to play a part in this. Ground zero, obviously 9/11, as well as just military actions. I mean, all of it is clearly meant to keep you in the mindset of where this is leading. And I wanted to quickly go through some of this because we did go quite a bit over the what we thought we were going to do for today. This is interesting. Just to start off with, small point, before March 7th, 2019, 7 takeaways from Mayor Jim Kenney's $5 billion spending plan. And we're talking about the mayor of Philly. And it just points out, interestingly, that they spent $22 million on new voting machines kind of right before, you know, the year before we get to this. I just felt like that would potentially be relevant as this goes forward. But the real point here is the idea that as I was digging through of this, him in individually, I found connections in regard to the TIP, which we think are very relevant. And the article is, Trump may try to steal November's election, meet the people who wrote the book on fighting back. Now it reads, and this is October 27th, 2020, and this is the author writing, I'm going to have two incredible guests. One was another person that's not relevant in this regard, and Brandon Evans, a Philly-based political operative who's worked with Larry Krasner, who I believe we mentioned already, and Mayor.
Yeah, he teamed up with ACAP, right. ICAP at Georgetown, right. And
sorry, go ahead. Was that it?
No.
Okay, and then Mayor Jim Kenney, who co-authored, which is what makes this very relevant, The Count, a guide on dealing with a contested election result. I've included the website here itself, which says, if everyone is able to vote and everyone's vote is counted, Trump will lose. Cool. Glad to see that they're calling the election already before we get there. And here's the actual PDF for you guys. Go ahead.
But the TIP tie-in that's in this article.
Oh, I'm getting into it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I just want to show that before we jump to it. Now it says right here in the next part, It says the report's authors are all top officials with Real Justice PAC, or PAC, which normally focuses on electing progressive prosecutors like Philadelphia's Larry Krasner. Their effort is heavily based on this summer's Transition Integrity Project, which conducted war games to play out what could happen in a closely contested election, which we went over in the show. And the point being that the writer for that is using the TIP efforts to and works with the Real Justice PAC and wrote the guide we're talking about is a person who would manage campaigns for the mayor of Philadelphia, which is a location where all this is seeming to point. And that's really interesting. And you have to wonder if there's any connection there. And it says the count's co-author, Evans, who is the person we're talking about, a political operative who's run campaigns here in Philadelphia for Mayor Kenney, said Trump's behavior has already made it clear that Democrats need more than a traditional plan of simply registering and turning out their votes and hoping for the best. So, you know, insinuating proactive action to go against something, which seems to inherently imply undemocratic actions. When somebody is really talking about undermining the election, believe them, which frankly, I don't think I've seen anybody outright imply they're going to undermine the election. They're reading into what they say he's saying. And it ends with saying, Mayor Kenney and Police Commissioner Daniel Outlaw and other Philadelphia leaders cannot rapidly change our broken ways of public safety, there will be no justice and thus no peace. Which I also wanted to show a tweet that was shared with me from Whitney that says, Commissioner Outlaw, the person we're discussing, just said there would be bleeding together of National Guard for civil unrest and potential federal troops for election because of the timeline. So it just kind of leads right into the National Guard discussion, which I don't know if you had anything else to talk about on that end. Nonetheless, the point is very interesting and relevant to see how the person who is making a lot of leading the decisions in this location has ties to the TIP in the direction of essentially not allowing Trump to win one way or the other, or really translating to creating chaos to achieve the obvious agendas that we've been laying out for you. Seems pretty interesting. What are your thoughts, Whitney?
It's just more of the same, and it's really crazy to see the direct mention of this was inspired by the TIP, which, as we pointed out, is a group that is, you know, gaming for chaos regardless of who wins. So it's not about protecting democracy. So the fact that someone is modeling themselves off of that and then focus specifically on Philadelphia and has deep ties to the district attorney that's partnered with Georgetown's ICAP and also the mayor of Philadelphia, you know, is just really disconcerting. And to wrap up here, because I actually have to go pick up my kid, we went a little longer than we had originally planned on. Wrong screen. This is what happens when you have infinite tabs up. Maybe it's this one. I did the same one again. Let me find it really quick. This one, the ground zero. Okay. It's this one. Alrighty. So here we have Vice, October 22nd. By the way, Vice has a very close relationship with the Broadcasting Board of Governors, responsible for reducing state-sanctioned media, which, because of the removal of the Smith-Mundt Act, assigned by Obama.
Looks like we lost you there. I believe that was the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, which was just adapted to be the opposite of what it should be, which essentially allows the use of propaganda on American individuals. But it looks like we might have lost Whitney here, so we can just wrap it up at the end here. The bottom line is, are you back? There we go.
Yeah, I think so. Sorry. Yeah, so Vice has a relationship with the State Department in terms of media. That's all I was trying to say. Here they talk about swing states face risk of militia violence during the election, and they're citing a report by the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, if you wanted to say anything about them, Ryan, and then I'm going to have to bail. Sorry.
No, it's okay. The last thing we were going to get into here in regard to this was something that stood out right here, I believe. Now, this is the group that we're talking about here, the ACLED, and it's interesting to see that, first of all, this is a group that doesn't seem, I mean, the whole point seems to be about what we decided it seems about, you know, kind of creating color revolutions, ultimately. It says the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project is a disaggregated data collection analysis and crisis mapping project. Interesting. But what I found most relevant is that they're talking about this in specifically all these locations except the United States. But it also points out they're a registered nonprofit organization of 501c3 in the United States. But and then you look down here and it says that this group receives financial support from the Bureau of Conflict and Stabilization Operations at the U.S. State Department. You know, so they don't gauge this kind of chaos in the United States, but they're funded by the United States and the University of Texas at Austin. And I just wanted to throw this in.
And really quick, the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the German Federal Foreign Office, who fund the White Helmets Syria. Interesting.
Yeah, and that actually makes it even more relevant to point out the first thing that stood out, which is we're talking about these groups down here that work. So, you know, Syrian Human Rights, Network for Human Rights. I mean, all these groups that are involved with foreign policy that have nothing to do with our elections that have, I mean, Lebanon support. Like, what is the point of having this entity involved with gaming out our chaos? It seems that it's yet another group that's involved with creating the kind of faux revolutions around the world that we've been seeing for a long time, you know?
If you go back and look at that particular mention of Syria for this group, it says the organizations they're partnered with are Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, the UN, all of whom have like really promoted the official mainstream narrative in Syria that is very counter to what's actually been going on the ground there for years. For people that are interested in learning more about that, I would refer you to the work of people like Vanessa Beely and Ava Bartlett, among others. But the fact that this is the organization that was responsible for promoting regime change narratives in places like Syria is now being used to set up this narrative there's going to be militia violence in swing states, very telling, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then just to finish off here, the Bureau of Conflict and Stabilization Operations, I just think it's interesting to see this group. We're talking about a group that's funding this group that's now gaming out or at least keeping track of our chaos. And it says that this group's mission is to anticipate, prevent, and respond to conflict that undermines U.S. national interest, deploying stabilization advisors, right? So we can see where this is all going, that your government is clearly playing, at least in a way that makes it seem like they're disconnected, you know, it's playing their part in responding to the conflict that they're playing a part in creating. I mean, this whole picture shows us very clearly how this is being set up, organized, at the very least leaned into to create the kind of things that we're dealing with. So anything else you want to leave before you take off?
So what I've said in similar videos, a lot of the organizations of the U.S. government that used to be focused on regime change or operations abroad, including the CIA, right, and other organizations like this, the State Department, whatever, Open Society Foundations, whatever, that used to be involved in this stuff going on abroad, this is all now being focused on the United States. And it's no coincidence that you have the intelligence community of the U.S. making this 2020 their big year from a pivot from focus on foreign foreign regime change stuff or whatever. No, it's no longer the worldwide threat assessment. Now they have, you know, given it to DHS and they're doing their first ever homeland threat assessment this year and all of this stuff. And this is, you know, as I've argued before, what DHS after 9/11 was always created to be, to have the focus be on a domestic war on terror as opposed to a foreign war on terror. The way they're setting up this election narrative, we're on the doorstep of another 9/11, and then the people that DHS said was going to be behind that another imminent 9/11 that they say they can't stop, they say those same groups are going to be responsible for the violence on election day. And we've been pointing out all of the very suspect national security ties to a lot of what's going on in the ground in places like Philadelphia and other states is honestly very instructive about what's likely to take place there. And if you look at the mainstream media reporting, they've essentially announced that that is what's going to take place. And they have been framing to a large degree, most frequently in the past couple months, but really for over a year, just how inevitable the chaos will be and how it will forever undermine and essentially destroy U.S. democracy, regardless of whether hacking or meddling or whatever happened. All that is necessary, as they said before, is to undermine people's faith in the system. And basically, they've also said time and again, as we've been pointing out, that this is about messing with the voters' minds. A lot of what's going to go on because of that stated goal is a psyop. A lot of stuff is going to be aimed at, you know, psychological operations. And so, you know, this is just some of the things that we can expect coming up on election day. And that's why it's really imperative that we felt it was imperative to get this information out there, even though the event hasn't taken place yet, because as they've already said, Facebook and Twitter are going to be using social media suppression tactics that they have used in places in other countries, not for elections, but for extreme political unrest and turmoil in places like Sri Lanka and Myanmar. And that's the tools they're going to be using here in the US on Election Day, Facebook and Twitter. So it will be very hard for myself and also for Ryan to try and counter these narratives that are likely to happen, that they're announcing are likely and saying are likely or even inevitable to happen on Election Day. We're trying to get this information out beforehand so people have an idea about some of the stuff that we've been seeing that maybe you wouldn't have been aware of otherwise. And that's the whole point of what we're doing right now.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And at the end of the day, they can see how far back they've been telling us this was going to happen. So we shouldn't perceive this as people have been giving them the reasons to report on why they see this happening, and rather that they were giving us the thought to have. Like, well before the candidates were even chosen, they're telling us there's going to be chaos. We have to see how they're telling us what's going to happen, mm-hmm. and that they have reasons to benefit from the way this plays out. So thank you Absolutely. For being here, and I'm sure we'll have more coming in regard to this election and plenty else. So as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Every counterterrorism professional I speak to in the federal government and overseas feels like we are at the doorstep of another 9/11, maybe not something that catastrophic in terms of the visual or the numbers, but that we can see it building and we don't quite know how to stop it.